and welcome to this week's episode of the Swap Me podcast. My name is Daniel Hyman.
My name is Niall McCann.
And it's not lost on us that we haven't done one of these in a few weeks?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Is it like that?
Well, I mean, I'm going to try to be better going forward.
I was
talking to you about this. It might just be a thing that we do less episodes. Like, we might just end up...
might be a thing that we are doing less episodes.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, that's just because I think we have been trying to do more episodes and it just hasn't been working out. But I think it might work out better if we just plan to do less episodes.
Okay, fair enough.
But we'll see. We'll keep everybody informed anyway.
Yes. So, yes, stay tuned, yes, listeners, to the internet.
What were we even talking about last time? Springsteen.
Springsteen.
Yeah.
Long one.
Yeah.
They're all long ones these days.
Liked it.
Well, people like Springsteen. That's my theory. Women like babies more than men. That's my theory. Women like Springsteen more than us. That's my theory.
Some people, yeah. I think people were into Springsteen. I think they got my take on Springsteen and your take on Springsteen and that.
I was talking to somebody who listened to it and felt it was hilarious when you roared, "I don't give a fuck about the cunt in the factory," or whatever you said.
You said that.
You said.
Oh, right.
Yeah, on the episode.
But I was kind of thinking about it afterwards, and I was like, you know, any picture of Springsteen you see, I think you're supposed to assume that there's a mop bucket just out of frame beside him there. And as soon as they put the camera away, he picks up the mop and goes back to work. Like, you know, it's a fucking construct every bit as much as Bowie or Bob Dylan or whatever. Like,
Lou Reed.
Lou Reed.
For example.
I don't think, we didn't sort of say on the last episode what the next swap was going to be. We did. I had one and you didn't. So I thought, when I was doing the edit, I thought, I'll just cut this out and then we can do whatever. And then recently, I've been reading a Lou Reed biography. And I thought, well, let's do...
Don't you do one of them every summer?
Yeah. There's a lot of them. But there was one written by Victor Boccris that was supposed to be the best one. And I just chanced upon it in a bookshop last time I was in Galway. And I picked it up. So I'm getting around to reading it now. And I thought, I have to do something with all this fucking bullshit.
Lou Reed knowledge.
I thought,
good, because I need to be educated, Dan. I know fuck all about them.
Well, this is it. I thought what we do is we talk about the Velvet Underground this week, the same way we talked about Springsteen the last week.
Because of the great success of the Springsteen format.
Yeah, and I was kind of thinking, like, we need something a little bit cooler than Springsteen to follow up Springsteen.
Why?
You know, we need it. Look, I get it. Springsteen
cool.
Bandana's awesome, like, you know, but I just thought it might be time to do something a little bit cooler.
Yeah, just because Lou Reed wouldn't be seen dead in denim.
No, I think he was
a
jeans,
a denim guy?
Jeans wearing kind of, like, it had to be black, I'm sure, but
fishnets underneath.
Black, then the cock ring. But we'll get to it anyway. So this week we're going to talk about the Velvet Underground, which I guess probably won't have the same reach as the Springsteen episode, but I think people are just
people
listening
like
to
the
it.
Velvet Underground.
But people are listening to it because it's us, and I think if we bore them with what we're talking about, they just put it off. Like,
yeah. People can't get enough of us.
Well, not these days, anyway.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So, and strange since last we talked.
Well, I bumped into you by chance last night.
There was a
Rock the Planet reunion at the Spirit Store.
Which I had no earthly business being at, quite frankly. I think I was there once in my entire life.
It was a nightclub here in Dundalk that myself and my friends and a lot of other people would go to because... they were not the strictest on IDs.
And also it was kind of the alternative nightclub.
Well, that's because no one else wanted to go there. It was pretty dingy, like, you know, and when you got, it was like, if we weren't there, no one would have been there. There was no one over 18 in that place, like, you know, and the ones that were noted for it.
Like Lacey's.
yeah.
Were noted for it. Okay.
As men to watch.
Yes. Well, getting the leave insert night until they're 29.
It's like that. Have you ever heard that Ricky Gervais joke about the march they had in London to have a protest to raise the gay consent age from 16 to 18, or no, from 18 down to 16?
Yeah,
and he was just like, didn't see a lot of 16-year-olds at that march. So, you know, and it was good. I was playing music at it, and...
I heard it went down well. I missed your music, but...
That's all right,
because
I didn't even know you were
going to
be there. Like.
Well, I didn't really know I was going to be there until
That, I was talking, like, that girl you work with came up to me. Was it a girl you worked with who was like, Radiohead are very depressing? And I was thank you for that unbidden criticism. That's great.
What did you play?
It was Karma Police. We played it first. Oh, yeah. Also,
you were telling me.
I will say, those people love that song. I don't know who she is, like, you know, but those people love
that
song.
She is, I think, a Rock the Planet original.
Well, she needs to. She needs to sit on somebody's opinions.
You should have, like, played Brimful of Asha or something.
Well, you can, but acoustic, that gets dull really quickly. Same three chords over and over again. There's dancing behind the movie scenes, behind the movie scenes.
It's a good tune, though.
It is, it's great, but part of what makes it great is, like, the version of it that got popular isn't even the original version. That's the Fatboy Slim remix.
I heard the original version. It's really slow.
It's much slower, yeah. Fatboy Slim sped it up and then also put all sorts of bells and whistles on it, like, you know.
Good old Fatboy Slim.
Good old Fatboy Slim, yeah.
Get your hands off me music, Norman!
Then the woman that sang that song, "We've Gone a Long, Long Way Together," that was off an album that was recorded in honor of Martin Luther King back in the day. And that was a song about Martin Luther King.
Mm.
And she was annoyed because she had read Fatboy Slim in an interview with Norman Cook saying that. I love finding this trash that everybody's forgotten about and turning it into something else. And she was like, "That song's not trash, Norman."
Norman.
Fuck.
No, and fair play. Fair play. Do you know what I wanted to go to, or I was supposed to go to, and I got kind of dosed. I got a dose and I just wasn't well and I didn't bother me arse then.
Work.
I wanted to go to they played the Elvis comeback special.
Oh yeah, I was
in the IMC.
I was away that night. I wanted to go and see that too. I don't know. I can't remember what I was doing. I was doing something else that night. It meant I couldn't go, but I wanted to go and see that as well.
I was feeling sorry for myself in my duvet, crawling literally into my duvet. Yeah, because I watched like a documentary the previous weekend
on Elvis Presley. Which one?
Not a very good one.
Oh, okay.
But, almost guaranteed, the guy, the Irish guy who used to do the little quirky stories for George Hook. I recognise his voice.
That was him narrating it, or?
Yeah, making it, like, he, yeah.
Have you ever watched the comeback special, just like the DVD or whatever?
No.
Oh, it's really good. It's really good.
It was very interesting. It was frustrating, though, watching the documentary. It wasn't a great documentary. Very little Elvis music in it. They were doing this thing on the fucking cheap and mistake.
There's a rake of those. You used to be able to get those things on DVD. They were called Critical Review of, like, Nirvana or whatever. Like, when you read the back of the thing, it was like, no members of Nirvana or any of their music are used in this documentary. It was all, like, fellas that wrote for Mojo or whatever, you know?
Yeah, it's... Well, I suppose that it could be interesting. It was kind of interesting, but it was a big hole. In a music documentary, it's a big hole if you haven't shelled out the rights for the music.
Like, yeah, I mean, it's...
And it's Elvis, so you kind of knew all the music anyway, but that just almost made it worse. Like,
but it would make it... It would make it kind of cheaper, because a lot of that Elvis stuff, the copyright... Am I right in thinking the copyright is expired on some of that stuff?
Really?
Even like stuff like That's Alright Mama and this kind of stuff, you could probably use it on the cheap. Because they're all old blues tunes and spirituals and stuff.
But could you play Elvis's own version of them?
Maybe not.
It's interesting, because as I understand it, Walt Disney is fucking copyright for everybody. Disney, the Disney Corporation is fucking...
Doesn't surprise me.
They're like, originally copyright was something like, I don't know, The Author's Life plus 20 years or something.
But that's all changed now, yeah. Or yeah, I think. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Well, as I understand it, Disney unfucking like clockwork go to court and get it extended by a further 20 years every time they want. Every 20 years after the anniversary of Disney's death. And sure, they have the fucking money to keep it tied up in the courts forever if they need to.
It's kind of sick.
Yeah, because whatever they're paying to keep extending the copyright, the length of copyright after the author's death, because Disney died in when? 60s, early 60s?
Was it that long ago, was it?
Or late 60s, maybe. Yeah.
Wasn't he a bit of a creep?
There's two ways of thinking. I wanted to swear, I watched an amazing lecture.
Disney. Watch that.
Yeah, sure. I wanted to swap it, but it's not on the internet anymore, and it's very annoying to me.
What is it, like, controversial?
No, it was just a guy who'd written a book, a biography of Disney, going through things and telling the story of his book. Trying to sell his book, basically. It was a camera at the back of a lecture.
So is all this stuff in the book, though? Yeah, you could swap the book. I would. That's something I would read. You know,
And I'm like, yeah, I might do. I'll see if it's an Audible. That'll be a good one.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But it was very interesting, and he had a bit more of a nuanced take on Disney, and not necessarily super. But anyway, the point of it is, I don't know about Elvis's copyright because Disney keeps getting it extended and extended and extended.
Maybe it might be worth swapping that as well, because it is like
the comeback special.
Yeah. I have the DVD somewhere, and I'm sure it's easily chanced upon these days. Like, sure. There's a great section of it where him and his original band are all sitting in a, for some reason they're in a boxing ring, but they're just sitting around with guitars doing all the old kind of Lordy, 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 Miss Claudie and all that kind of stuff. And Elvis keeps doing his lip curl, and he's going, "Something wrong with my lip." And he keeps like, and they're kind of joking around, like it is pretty cool, like, you know. And you, like, Elvis is, he's definitely got his hair dyed for this thing, like, you know, he's getting a little bit older, but he
was blonde.
Yeah. Oh, was he blonde? All right. So yeah, he's definitely got his hair.
Well, somebody told me that. I was fucking Neve. I was watching the fucking documentary with her, and she was like, she was like, "Oh my god, you can tell it's dyed, can't you?" And I was like, "What?"
It's jet black, like, you know.
Yeah, she was like, "Well, he's blonde. He was a blonde guy." I'm like, what? Elvis was blonde?
Yeah, that wouldn't have worked, would it?
It's hard to imagine it. But then, is that just because he's Elvis? Like,
oh yeah, I mean, but he's like fucking Mickey Mouse or someone now. Someone like Mickey Mouse.
But he is. He is.
But he's You see, the thing is, the comeback special did exactly what it was supposed to do. It put him back in everybody's head as this fucking great rock and roll artist. Like, but he squandered it. Like, he didn't.
Was he?
Yeah, I mean, he was. Yeah, he was like, he was rock and roll. You know, I mean, he wasn't. Like, he didn't write. He didn't write any songs. Mm. So, like, you can't really put him on the same level as you might put Buddy Holly or Chuck Berry or some of these kind of people. Like, yeah. You know, but he was the one that made it popular.
Cliff Richard.
Cliff, yeah. Well, I mean, Elvis was the one that made it popular. Elvis was the one that fucking girls loved him and dudes wanted to be him, you know.
Mm.
So that was like...
Yeah, fair play.
Like, even Paul McCartney says he saw a picture of Elvis before he heard Elvis, and even just looking at him, he was like, "Oh, who the fuck is this?" Like, you know.
It's like an alien.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, that's fair enough. But, yeah, I didn't go see him anyway.
No, I didn't either. I really wanted to, but we were doing something else. I can't remember.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to. I was just toast. But anyway, maybe next time. I mean, Cliff Richard, the reason Cliff Richard was in my head there is that he's got a big concert coming up in all the cinemas.
Really?
My thoughts, exactly.
Why? Who's going to go into that?
I wonder if he has his following, like, the same people who went to see, you know, Best Exotic Marigold Hotel and Mrs. Brown's Boys. Will they go see him?
Will they go and see a concert at the Pictures, though?
I don't know. I suppose it depends. Maybe advertising in the Argus or something. Or on RIP.ie. Read it out after the deaths on LMFM.
My mom shared something on Facebook the other day that said, it's a Facebook page you can like. So you get notifications of the death notices on your phone. Fucking hell.
People love that shit.
I know, it's so fucking weird.
My father listens religiously to the deaths on LMFM. He switches over to LMFM to hear the deaths.
My mom literally has a
awake.
My mom has a handwritten list of people that she sends Christmas cards to. And I remember when I came back from America the last time before I was away for 3 months, and then I came back for a few weeks. One of the first nights I was back, I was sitting at the table with her, and she was literally crossing dead people off this list.
Oh my god.
You're just like, fuck me. Like, in a way, is it a healthy relationship with death? Is it, you know...
I remember hearing it said that the Irish relationship with death is actually pretty healthy. It's not a bad way to do things.
It's not like it is.
Like the 3 day wake, and then
the social element of it is kind of hard to take. Like, you know, but
well, is it hard to take, or is it kind of? It gives you something to do. Do you know what I mean?
No,
that makes sense.
Well, what do you mean? Just tell me what you mean.
When somebody dies, you're not stewing in. You're just. It's not you and your thoughts. Like it's.
No, it's you and a mountain of egg and onion sandwiches.
Yeah, and where did? Yeah, and run down and get the box of another box of tea. What are the big boxes? Don't come back with a wee box of tea.
Egg and onion sandwiches are disgusting. Like raw onion in an egg sandwich. No mayonnaise or anything, like, you know.
Yeah, Yeah, they don't have to be egg and onion, the sandwiches. They can be
but
egg and
onion. But often they are. Oft they are.
Once I was at a wake, and they had these little pots of Caesar salad. That was
nice.
Lovely.
Also, pizza.
Do a pizza.
Pizza wake.
Do a pizza. Well, the food comes in, but it tends to be for the family. Like, you get lasagnas and quiches and casseroles.
But that's
stuff
so people
like that.
Don't have to cook.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's there. I mean, if it just, I'd feel uncomfortable going to a wake and saying, there isn't a bit of lasagna there, right? Is there? I don't like the egg and onion.
Plate of stew or something.
Not a big fan of the egg and onion. Because the answer would be, yeah, we have three lasagnas. They're not going to get out. Like,
there was a neighbor of ours over in the house one night, and it was around Christmas, and she was there, and someone called to the door with a Christmas cake for Mom while this woman was there, and Mom took the cake and put it up in a press or whatever, and she was making tea, and she was like, "Lady," this woman's name. She said, "Making a cup of tea. Will you have a biscuit or something?" And she was, "No, I'll have a bit of that cake." You're just like, you cheeky fuck.
Yeah, that's pretty fuck. Neck and like a jockey's balance.
Okay, there was a cut there.
Seamless, though, I think you'll find.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. What would you call controversial revealings that we can't share with just the layman?
Yes, yes. You have to be an initiate. You have to let us fucking paddle your arse and I don't know.
Yeah, wear one of that mask and. You know,
yeah. Oh, I went to see Black Klansman last night.
Yeah, you were saying you enjoyed
before,
it.
Before we went to the Rock the Planet thing, which I had no... We stopped talking about the Rock the Planet thing.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, it was a nightclub we all went to when we were younger. Not, I didn't know you at school, so this was like...
I didn't go to it. I just happened to... Neve was friends with people who used to go to it, so
yeah.
They all kind of met up there, and I tagged along. And
it was like all the people I knew... When I was in junior cert year, maybe it was the year after I got into a band. Through the band, we were playing in a place not very far from here, actually, called the Sunshine Bar.
Oh, yeah.
And then we kind of ended up with this kind of circle of friends, and we all hung out in this place, Rock the Planet. I wasn't quite the diehard that some of these people were, but I went, like, myself and friends of mine, we would go every week, because we could go in and we could get served, you know, at 15, 16 years old. Like, you know, the first time I was in there, I was 14.
There you go.
Which is crazy. Can you imagine 14?
You're a strapping chap then.
But I'm not.
You're probably about 40.
I was a pipsqueak when I was at secondary school, you know. But so yeah, they had this reunion last night, and I was did originally there was supposed to be two bands that we had myself and friends of mine, two bands that were sort of on the go when we were at school. We were both supposed to be playing this week. Every day someone else fucking dropped out, and then the drummer broke his toe. So basically there was the same drummer in both bands, so that knocked out both bands having a full electric set. So out of two bands, it boiled down to me and him. So he was on the cajon, you know, that percussion thing you sit on, it's like a box,
yeah.
And me on acoustic guitar. So
what's that called?
A cajon.
A cajon?
Yeah.
What kind of a word is that?
C-A-H-O-N-E. Is it? I'm sure it's African or something, is it?
Fair play. Because it sounds a bit Irish.
I suppose it does a bit, doesn't it?
Come on.
It doesn't look Irish written down, but...
Jimmy O'Morocco on the cajon.
Yeah, you can... Yeah, I can hear it.
Oh, it made people weep.
But,
It was weird. It was a lot of 90s music, which suited me fine. I think they should do that every weekend, basically. If
no, don't... Not you as well.
I kind of enjoyed it. I wasn't super looking forward to it. I was like, oh, I'm going to be sitting there with all your friends who are lovely people.
But still.
That's not the issue. I couldn't talk because it was too noisy.
Yeah, my voice is sore today, like, you know, because I was screaming all night, like, you know.
And then I enjoyed it quite a lot, actually.
Yeah, like, I bumped into you. I had a bit of crack with you. I met a guy I haven't seen since I was about fucking 17 or 18, like, you know.
I met a couple of people, yeah.
I was having a conversation with two people and we were talking about music. And I was chatting about, like, oh, what kind of stuff he's into? Like, what do you listen to now? And they were like, oh, you pretty much just listen to 90s music. And I was like, God, do you not listen to, like, Kurt Vile or The War on Drugs or Courtney Barnett or anything? No? And they were like, no, not really. Oh, okay. I'm going to go.
Danny, when you solve music, you don't have to keep
No, after a while, it was like, it was nice for a little while. But then it's like, this is, like... I don't know, like, there was great lengths gone to recreate it, which was nice, but after a little while I started, it's me, I'm the issue, obviously, but I started getting very uncomfortable with the whole thing.
Alright, I thought it was kind of good fun. I went out and danced for a while, because at the start of the night, I had a whiskey, and then I was kind of on my second whiskey, and I was like, do you ever have that feeling, do you ever know when you're not going to be able to drink yourself into a mood?
Yeah, I do know what you mean.
It's like, more alcohol at this moment is not going to loosen things anymore.
Yeah, it happens if you've been drinking the night before sometimes.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
It's just drink on like a wall. You know, it's not...
It's like you're pouring it into a bucket with a hole. It's just not going to...
Yeah.
Things are not going to get better.
Also, probably not the wisest way to use alcohol, but here and ever.
Exactly.
It's where we live.
Yeah, exactly. But then the Strokes came on and last night, and
this is the thing. That's not era specific. That was way after all that was finished up. Laurent the Planet had caught fire by the time the Strokes album came out.
All I know, Dan, is I went out on the dance floor and I danced myself into the mood instead of drinking myself into the mood.
Danced yourself clean. Do you know that song?
No.
LCD Sound System. We're going to have to swap that album at some point.
All right. Well, don't let me stop you.
Yeah, maybe this week. Who knows? See where the fucking mood takes.
Stay tuned, listeners. It was interesting. I kind of liked it. It was good because you don't get 90s nights very often.
Yeah, you do.
Do you?
Yeah, I think most nights are fucking 90s nights. If you go into the bartender, it's fucking 90s night.
Oh, but you can't listen to the music in the bartender. There's no dance floor in the bartender.
Not
a complaint. The bartender is a conversation pub, and I love it. It's maybe my favourite pub in the town.
I like it. Well, I like the Spirit Store.
Yeah, but I don't think that. Yeah, that's not really in the town, no.
Well, I mean
up the town, like.
Okay, fair enough. We're gonna split hairs.
Not down the town. I didn't mean down the town.
You're talking like a 15-minute walk or something, like. You know.
Yeah, I know. Okay, but they're quite similar pubs, actually.
They are in a way, yeah. Like
the bartender is like the corporate version of the Spirit Store.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little bit sort of cleaner around the edges, whereas in the Spirit Store, I think you do get headbangers in the Spirit Store as well. And that's what makes it what
Jesus,
it is.
You got them last night.
Yeah, yeah. There was a lot.
I was having a fag.
But there was...
I was two separate conversations that were, judged by their own merits even, quite bizarre.
That's that gang, though. That's what they're like.
It is. And I felt like... I don't want to say it, right? But I'm gonna. But I felt like there's a social awkwardness in me, Dan.
Oh, look who you're talking to.
I understand that. But I also feel like if I had been there and I'd been in there, that would have been nurtured in me to an unhealthy extent.
Yeah. You've hit the nail on the head.
And it's not that I feel like there's only so many times you can sit at a card table with David Quigley and still think the stuff you think is important. I love that man. That man has argued me into crazy corners. You watch some kind of documentary and the next time you play cards, here's why everything you think is wrong. It's like, oh, okay.
Who doesn't like that?
Well, it makes a card game go well.
It was good. If I say anything more, I'll get myself in trouble. But
fair
good.
Play. I enjoyed it. I thought I wasn't even at Rock the Planet when Rock the Planet was Rock the Planet.
But it was great when it was Rock the Planet, though, you know, because it was like, you know, that was like, I know, like... I had friends through secondary school, but that was the first time we had anywhere to fucking go.
Yeah, fair.
You know, we didn't know. We were just like sort of kicking around until the sort of junior cert was over, going, where do we go? Yeah, well, even that was somewhere to go. Like, you know, even before that, we weren't doing that. Like, see, for me, that kind of, there was the Rock the Planet, LA Rock, and it spread out into Ice House Hill, gigs in the Sunshine Bar, this kind of stuff. Like, you know, that was the whole scene. And I was very much on the semi-outside of all that with my own friends. Like, there was people there last night that were like, oh, I hope so-and-so makes it. And I was like, I have no fucking idea who you're talking about. Like, you know.
But that's not being on the outside. That's just people have their own sort of.
And I was
clique, their own cohort.
When they said that the bands couldn't play, and then it was like, and Danny O'Hanlon stepped in at the last minute to do acoustic 90s songs or whatever. Mm-hmm. Someone put a crying face emoji.
Who was that?
I don't know, just someone who was annoyed the other band wasn't playing, but still, you know. And then it said on the thing, and then DJ Baz is going to take us back to the 90s, whatever, like, you know, and then...
DJ Baz.
Someone had said, oh, we would have all been fine with just Baz, but whatever, well done. And I was just like, all right, fuck Ollie's then. And then I brought it up on stage, of course, like, you know.
And how did it go down?
And it was just like, I got a few laughs, because I said, like, what did I say? I said, I hope you're all enjoying introducing your partners to the people you used to have sex with. So, I avoided anything awkward like that by not having sex with any of them. Because I knew in 2018 it would stand me in good stead.
It's quite a prophylactic.
So, Niall.
Daniel.
We don't have a swap this week necessarily.
Well, we kind of swapped. What are we in?
26 minutes in.
Fair fucks.
Fuck it. Like, that's the...
That's yeah, the that thing gets to us do. Going.
Yeah, it's the runway.
Yeah, yeah. But you asked me to listen to a load of Velvet Underground albums.
Well, basically, yeah. I mean, we did the Springsteen episode last week. And during the week, I was kind of thinking that if we can't get together every week and do an episode, what we might end up doing, it's all in the air, but what we might end up doing is more of these kind of, like, specials about one person's career or a band or whatever, like, you know.
Because the world needs our insight, Dan.
Well, yeah, they do. Frankly. So, what I did was you to listen to the Velvet Underground, right? So, Velvet Underground.
Yes. Tell me about them. I am the uninitiated.
Well, you know, you're somewhat of a Lou Reed fan, aren't you?
Yeah, I do like Lou Reed. Transformer was good.
Yeah.
It was a very early album for me.
Really, yeah?
Well, it was a college album.
Oh, okay. And that's his, including the Velvet Underground stuff, that's his sixth album.
Fair play. It's a really good album.
Yeah, I like Transformer a lot. But anyway, Lou Reed.
I think you. Did you recommend it to me?
I think Lou Reed was kind of a college thing for us. Because remember, was it Eugene who used to play that song?
No, man, when I was a young man in high school. You believe it or not, I wanted to play football for the coach. And all those older guys, they said that he was mean and cruel, but you know, I want to play football for the coach. They said I was a little too lightweight to play linebacker, so I'm playing right in.
You know, I want to play football for the coach. Yeah. What's that song called? Coney Island Baby?
Coney Island Baby.
The glory of love. Do what the man... Look, this will tell you all you need to know about Lou Reed. He wrote an album of commercial, radio-friendly love songs to a transvestite. That whole album is about a man called Rachel.
Fair fucks.
So he was Lou Reed, a guy who had it in his head that he wanted to be like a writer or a poet or whatever, mm-hmm. but. Also wanted to play music, you know. So his whole trip was
he basically
wanted fucking to be William Burroughs but in a rock and roll band, you know.
They are like the original New York arty weirdos.
Yeah, they're the, well, in rock and roll for sure, like, you know.
Yeah.
And but basically he when he left college, he got a job as a staff songwriter with a record label called Pickwick.
Songwriter.
Well, yeah, basically
like
what they used to do.
Like a Brill Building kind of thing.
Yeah, sort of, but it was for a budget record company who would be like, if the Beach Boys were number one, these lads would have to knock out 12 surfing songs. And they'd all be recorded under different band names, and it would
skeet
be put out
surfing.
As...
Well, skeet surfing!
This would be it. Like,
did you ever see that?
What is that?
It's top secret.
You know what? A lot of people talk about that film.
I love it.
It's supposed to be really funny. I've never watched it.
Well, okay, it's The Naked Gun or Top Hot Shots.
Is Leslie Nielsen in it?
No.
Okay, because he did do another one of those kind of spoof movies, didn't he?
Yeah, he was in a lot of them.
When he just hit the goldmine with that kind of acting. It was just like, just be serious. and it'll be hilarious.
Yeah. Like a midget out of urinal, I was going to have to keep on my toes.
This is he didn't have to mug it up or tap dance or anything. Like, he just did these dumb lines as seriously as he could, and it's like, boom.
It's cool.
Funny.
So, well, if you can imagine The Naked Gun, but Val Kilmer playing as vaguely sort of early 60s Elvis, who...
Second time he's played Elvis then, isn't it? He's Elvis in True Romance.
Yeah, that's true. But in this one, he had like he had kind of weird parody Elvis songs that
really?
He was writing for.
Yeah, I don't know what's that. That sounds like it'd be right up my street.
That's not a huge element of it. It's still the Zucker Brothers sort of boom, 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 boom
yeah.
jokes.
Did they do Hot Shots as well?
They did.
Hot Shots is one of my favorites.
It's very funny.
Look, it's one of my favorite scenes in any film when he's walking along the water. He's skipping stones.
Yeah.
He goes, no matter what I do, I seem to end up hurting someone. And it's a guy going by in a canoe, and the stone hits him in the head.
Ow!
Into the water.
It's natural. I have my father's eyes. Tapa, put those away.
What is that thing like? I want to meet your parents. I want to pet your dog. Tapa, my parents are dead. My dog ate them.
It's a ridiculous film.
Fucking Charlie Sheen, back when...
Charlie Sheen?
He probably was nuts then, too, like, you know, but...
He seemed like he could hold it together a bit more.
Yeah, he did, but...
What do I know? Maybe he's perfectly happy now these days.
Possibly. I think he was always perfectly happy, to be honest. Like, I don't think his happiness was the issue.
I don't know. It feels like he was trying to fill some kind of hole now that was not going to be filled.
That seemed to be a nightly aim.
If that man filled many a hole and was never the hole needed filling.
So, Lou Reed.
Lou Reed, another man who filled many a hole.
Yeah. Or volunteered his own.
To each his own.
But he was, working with this sort of cheapo record company that would knock out these fake albums.
Sorry,
that was like, you know... 15 surfing hits, like, and it would be Lou Reed and another bunch of weirdos writing surfing songs for...
Beach Blanket, bingo!
So, basically, he wrote a song called The Ostrich.
Okay, I want everybody to settle down now. We got some new we're going to show you, man. It's going to knock you dead when we come upside your head. You get ready? You said, here we go, yeah! All right, come on. Come on. Come on, let's go. Yeah. All right. Everybody get down on your face, man. Get ready, yeah.
He wrote it in a really weird way. He tuned all the strings on the guitar to one note. So he had 6 strings on the guitar all tuned to like E, and that's how he played it, like, you know.
How did that work?
I mean, it sounds... I'll drop it in here. It sounds pretty fucking awesome. Like,
right,
but so they thought this thing could be an actual hit single, and they put together a fake band, and that's how he met John Cale, who was in New York from Wales, who was studying fucking weird jazz music and
viola. Is he the guy who... In White Light, White Heat, is he the guy that narrates that weird story of the guy posting himself?
Waldo Jeffers had reached his limit. It was now mid-August. Jumenti had been separated from Marsha for more than 2 months. In 2 months, all he had to show were 3 dog-eared letters and 2 very expensive long-distance phone calls. True, when school had ended and she'd returned to Wisconsin, due to Locust, Pennsylvania, she had sworn to maintain a certain fidelity.
They get other musicians, Maureen Tucker, and then Lou Reed's college buddy, Sterling Morrison. They fall in with Andy Warhol sees them playing somewhere, invites them to be part of the whole factory scene. Well, Andy Warhol suggested that they pair up with Nico. See, Nico wasn't in the band.
Yeah.
And then he suggested they pair up with Nico.
Around and Nico.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So they do, like, she sings 3 or 4 songs on the album simply because Andy Warhol thought it was a good idea. She was knocking around the factory, like, you know.
It kind of was a good idea.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
I be your mirror, reflect what you are, in case you don't know. I be the wind, the rain and the sunset, light on your door to show that you're home. When you think the night has in your mind that inside you're twisted and unkind, let me stand to show that you are blind. Please put down your hands, 'cause I see you.
But anyway, this is a track off that first album, Velvet Underground and Nico. This one has Lou Reed on vocals, and it's called Waiting for the Man.
tune.
It makes it. So, I think, right?
Yeah.
I think any time a band now since that spends trying to look cool is time wasted, because I think the Velvet Underground perfected that. You see pictures of the Velvet Underground and it's like, the rest of the bands, take your shades off, get rid of the leather, forget about it. Been done better than you're ever going to do it. I think they are the coolest band that there's ever been.
They're trying, though.
Yeah, of course they're trying. You can't be cool without trying.
Really?
Yeah, of course. Like, how do you... Like, we don't try. We're not cool.
I try.
Never have been.
I try very hard, Dan. I don't know. There's a smack of... I don't know. There's a smack of pretentiousness here.
Smack
of
smack.
There's a smack of smack and pretentiousness.
Yeah, but that's why they're cool.
All right, okay, yeah. Look, I'm not trying to... I enjoyed it. I actually had no problem listening to these albums. They were good albums. They were fun.
You even went ahead and listened to that. I should have told you that that Squeeze isn't really...
with the cock fucking cover.
Is there a cock on the cover?
Well, it's a building and somebody's grasping it by the bottom of the building. A giant hand is grasping it.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
It's like, all right.
See, that's trying too hard. That's when you can see that the people that were steering the ship were all gone at that point. Like, there's no Lou Reed. There's no John Cale. They're both gone at that point.
They're peculiar, but they're very... That actually doesn't surprise me that he had a job churning out sort of easy listening hits. Or easy listening non-hits, whatever.
Pretend hits from an alternative universe.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me, because the songs are very listen-to-able and catchy.
Yeah, they're simple. You know, because he's into his rock and roll. He wasn't really into being fucking, you know, like... He was three chords he was interested in. Three chords, literate lyrics, noise.
Yeah.
You know.
It is. It's a lot of noise. It's very discordant of the time. Is it?
Yeah, I mean, for the time... Like, the thing is, like, that's what John Cale brought to it, because John Cale was over studying experimental music on some kind of scholarship from Wales, and he... If you listen to the early
version... Experimental music... What is it?
Some kind of... Like, I don't know what he would call it. Like, free jazz or experimental, improvisational jazz.
How much of that scholarship went on hard Class A drugs?
I can imagine most of it, like...
Whoever gave that man that scholarship, I don't know, the educational board of Cymru should come looking for the fucking money back.
But he, so if you, there are actually some demos out there that when you listen to them, they're, like, there's a demo of Venus and Furs when you listen to it. It's, but the original of it is acoustic. It's almost like a fucking an old English folk song or something. It's very acoustic and it's got none of the noise that's in the actual final recording.
So and John Cale.
And also, John Cale sings it for some reason, even though Lou Reed is the singer in the band. On the demo, John Cale sings it, so he's like, shiny, shiny, shiny boots of leather, whiplash, girl child. You know, like, and it's weird. Like, the song is there, it's the same melody, but it's the noise. I feel like the noise and the sort of droning viola and stuff, that's their sound, like, you know.
Down he sins. Streetlight fancies chase the costumes she shall wear. Ermine furs adorn imperious. Severin, Severin awaits you there. sleep for 1,000 years, 1,000 dreams that would awake me. Different colors made of tears.
That was a big thing in the 60s. Do you remember the Planet of the Apes? You ever see Planet of the Apes, did you?
The film?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember that theme tune at the start of Planet of the Apes that was all...
Well,
it's like, really? That was your... This will get the audience going.
Well, I'm sure people were just bending things around a little bit, and sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. Like, you know. Like, yeah. There's parts of the bell run, like...
Flip the coins, you were.
They got it wrong a couple of times as well. Like, what's that one? Is it the Black Angels death song? I'll play you. It's on the Velvet Underground and Nico album, so it's definitely one of the stranger ones. Here's a bit.
Oh, towards the end.
Myriad choices of his fate set themselves out upon a plate for him to choose. What had he to lose? Not a coast, bloody country, all covered with sleep, where the Black Angel did weep. Not an old city street in the east. Gone to choose.
That song got them fired from their first gig, apparently.
Why?
The guy, they were playing in some place in New York, and the guy was like, if you play that again, you're done. And, of course, I think they just played it, and then they played it again.
Because they're rockin' rockers. Yeah. Why did he hate that song?
Well, I mean, can you imagine being in the same room as that viola on that song? Oh, being like, ah!
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah, I had it on earbuds. I can very much.
At least on the album, it's been compressed, and some of the jagged... frequencies taken out of it, like, you know, can you imagine just being beside it in a pub somewhere? Can you imagine if someone had dug out the viola last night, like, you know, instead of going, wee, 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 wee.
What is the attitude there? I don't get that attitude. You're like, oh, this is uncomfortable for people.
But, I mean, it's as valid as anything else. Like, it's as valid as making someone comfortable or happy or melancholy or, you know.
Making someone uncomfortable.
Like, is that not what this stuff is supposed to do? Is to, like, I'm not saying you should always be made uncomfortable, but I think it's pretty, you know, it's as valid as anything else, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of oddness in it. Is that all true? That's not a pose. That is the shit that guy was into.
In what do you mean, like, drug-wise, or?
All that weird sex stuff.
Yeah, no, like, this is the thing about Lou Reed. All that stuff is true. Like, he was into whatever was happening down at that factory with that Warhol.
Whatever you're having yourself, Mrs.
Yeah, like, I think him and Bowie were involved for a while, like, you know, and...
Well, like an item.
Well, they would, maybe not like an item, but they definitely fucking balled each other at some point, like, you know.
Fair play. Fair play. Odd-looking dudes. Odd-looking dudes.
Yeah,
the 60s
yeah.
might have been the last decade where an odd-looking dude could still... It'll score big.
Yeah.
Well,
what is that? Have you seen... There's a thing up on Netflix at the minute that's like 10-minute comedy specials by maybe... I think there's 10 of them or something like that.
No,
and they're really short, 10 or 15-minute specials by sort of newer comedians. And there's this... I can't remember this woman's name, but she does a whole bit about like... The only way you can be truly good at sex is if you are not afraid at some point of getting a little bit of poop in your mouth.
Right, fair play. You can't just avoid the area, no?
Apparently not, Niall.
Okay.
The age of avoiding the anus is past.
No, it's anuses all the way
down. It's a lovely
age
to live through, let me tell you.
It's one of the many fine things we've lost through the sexual revolution.
Yeah, everybody has to pay a visit at some point now.
I feel like I've done my time. What was I saying? Oh yeah, Lou Reed and all his weird sex stuff. So then, yeah, so I suppose everything that comes after is in its own way revolutionary. How revolutionary are they as a band?
Well, people think that they were, like, you could say Dylan was the first literary songwriter.
Could he?
But I mean, the thing is with Dylan, though, he was taking fairly traditional... themes and stuff, and he was reworking Guthrie and he was reworking Pete Seeger and people like that, whereas yeah. I think Lou Reed just said, look, if it's okay for Hubert Selby Jr. and William Burroughs to talk about it, then I'm going to talk about it too.
Okay.
So that's why you get weird sex and heroin and all this stuff, like, you know.
Yeah, okay, fair play. Fair play, it's weird. I bought Slaughterhouse 5 there from Amazon just like 2 nights ago.
I'm still to reading. Listen to or to read?
To read. I'm not... That's just a, by the way, I'm not deep enough into it to give you any kind of judgment. Although it's very readable, I can give you that judgment. It's very, it's a page turner.
The, it's some of these, I wonder about listening to some of these classics as audiobooks. I think the best, for me, the best audiobooks is someone's biography that they're reading themselves. I like those kind of ones, but I did listen to, I did listen to The Long Goodbye, and even though I enjoyed it, there was like a guy, where every time a woman was talking, she talked like this. He was a guy who talked with a deep voice when it was a detective talking. But then the woman came in and she was like, oh, well, I guess I'll just go in the other room and pout.
I'm not bad, Mr. Vanyan. I'm just drawn that way. Oh, dear old. Yeah, okay, it's a fair point. But, you know, you can still read them now.
Yeah, no, that's true. And
I'm flying through Slaughterhouse 5. I feel like I might be flying through it too quickly. I can't be taking it in. Like, but it's written that way. It's just really fucking...
The fact that you're reading anything in this day and age, Niall, is amazing.
Well, oh, I hope it doesn't die out. I hope it doesn't die out because it's not the same. No, it hasn't.
No, I know. I'm only joking.
Because it's not the same as listening to it.
No, you shouldn't. Just, like in a certain... Depending on who's reading these audiobooks... They're all well and good. Like, you know, I got an Audible subscription after you were talking about it, and I use it, like, you know.
Yes, no, so do I. I still use the Audible, and it's grand, it's good, and it's fine, and I like it. But it doesn't go in the same way, like.
No, it doesn't. No,
as you read might say.
It doesn't go in the same way.
It doesn't go in the same way, and... I don't know. It depends. I suppose if you get somebody who really gets something, they might be able to read it in such a way that...
Yeah, but I think sometimes, is it not just whoever's cheap reading these things? Like, and you're
I
like,
think so.
Really?
So
it's kind of the take we're going with here?
It's kind of hit and miss. Like, who's going to spend money on that for an audiobook? Even though they're fucking expensive if you don't subscribe. Well,
you're 30 quid or something if you don't have the subscription.
Yeah, which
and
is...
also I wonder... I bought on my last Audible thing, I got Laurie Kilmartin's audiobook, and I was wondering, does she get any money out of that? Like, what way does that work? By getting it on Audible, am I avoiding paying her? And is it just Amazon getting that money? Or?
Ah, no. An audiobook's just a book. Like, it's she would get the same royalties. Like,
oh, okay.
I would hope. Unless there's something seriously rotten in the state of Denmark.
Why wouldn't there be, though?
Fair point. But I don't think. I really don't think. No. Why don't we do an audiobook instead of a podcast? That's where the money is.
But do we have to write an audiobook first?
Yeah, but should
we just read out your book?
We're just 2.5... No, listen, we're doing 2.5 hours a fucking week. Like. Well, we're definitely doing 2.5 hours a month.
You fucking join this thing together and go one end to the other. This is a freeform novel we're writing here.
Yeah, man. At the factory, they would have jumped all over this.
Yeah, yeah. They might not have had sex with us, but they would have jumped all over the concept.
Maybe better off.
Yeah. Has to be a lot of STDs going around that fucking factory.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that would have to be.
But is it a thing? You know, I wonder about this kind of stuff. Like, because I read a thing about Philip K. Dick as well, and they were saying that, like, his house would be full of all sorts of weirdos and that, like junkies and fucking... Yeah. Like, and I guess that, you know, and then the factory, you can't turn left or right without someone trying to suck you off, like, you know, whatever, like, you know. So at what point do you do the stuff, yeah, like, the songs horrible. Or the books or whatever, like, you know.
Yeah, it is weird.
If you're already getting those results, why would you bother?
It was an intense, I suppose it must have been just quite an intense time and an intense scene, like, because there's all sorts of, there's influences from all over the place in this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's quite whimsical and sort of innocent nearly in some places, and it's...
Musically, there's a couple of things that are kind of left over from him trying to write pop songs, like that one, There She Goes Again, like, melodically, that's just, like, bouncy enough.
There she goes. She's out on the streets again. She's down on her knees, my friend. But you know she'll never ask you please again. Now take a look, there's no tears in her eyes. She won't take it.
but then you hear him go, "You better hit her." Dun, 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 dun. And you're like, "Wait, what?"
It's very, yeah. It's a very weird flavor, the Velvet Underground.
Yeah.
It is a very weird
flavor. Particularly those first two albums.
Yeah.
The one, like, so I just want to give a quick blast of one of the songs he did with Nico, because Nico is actually one of the best things about this album, like, you know, yeah, so, yeah. Which one do we go with? Yeah, Femme Fatale. There's a good one.
Come on.
It's not hard to realize, just look into her false colored eyes. She built you up to just put you down. What a clown, cause everybody knows.
She's a Femme Fatale.
The thing she does to please. Just a little tease. See the way she walks. Hear the way she talks. You're written in her book.
It's about Edie Sedgwick, apparently.
Oh, yeah. The
Andy
factory.
Warhol said, "Why not write a song about Edie?" And apparently Lou Reed loved that. When
why didn't he do something in fucking... Why don't you do it your fucking self, Andy?
Well, apparently this was one of Lou's things, was that he kind of liked being given these kind of assignments. I guess that's why he was able to work at a fucking staff songwriting place and all that. He kind of... Like Andy Warhol would say... Well, the big one was Andy said to him, "Hey, Lou, you should write a song called Vicious." And he's like, "What do you mean?" "Oh, you know, Vicious, like I hit you with a flower." And then, you know that song? It's the first song on Transformer. Vicious,
okay.
You hit me with a flower.
But, do you know what?
And then his line in that is, "You do it every hour." Which is like, okay, the first two lines are really good, but the one you added to that, it's a bit shit.
But, yeah, but you see, here's the thing. Anybody can come up with two awesome lines.
I suppose, it's, yeah. But that was, he said, write a song about Edie Sedgwick, and he was like, "Well, what do you mean?" "Well, she's a femme fatale."
You mentioned my book a little while ago, and I'm not bringing it up to push it, but you made me...
Loyalties available on Amazon now.
Amazon.com. But somebody was saying, "Well, that's amazing." And I was like, "It's really not. You just keep writing until you have a book." Like, and she's like, "No, it's really not." But that is the main thing, right?
Yeah,
there's no
is.
Trick to it, but just doing it is the thing.
Well, the hardest thing...
So if you
thing,
have somebody who keeps giving you assignments, you're almost getting over the hardest hump, like...
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It's weird.
But apparently that was kind of Andy Warhol's thing. He would just, like, put ideas in his head about things to write, you know?
Fair
There's
fair.
A really good album that is almost like... You could almost call it a fifth Velvet Underground album in a way. Like, after Andy Warhol died, Lou Reed and John Cale got together and made an album called Songs for Drella, which was all songs about Andy Warhol.
When did he die? 84, 85?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. But okay. They did, it was Songs for Drella, because apparently it was a nickname for Andy Warhol. It was a mixture between Dracula and Cinderella. Drella. But there's a great song in that. It's called It's Work. The most important thing is work. And there's a line in it where it's literally like him singing about conversations him and Andy Warhol had.
"No matter what I did, it never seemed enough. He said I was lazy, I said I was young. He said, how many songs did you write? I'd written 0, I landed at 10. You won't be young forever. You should have written 15. It's work.
The most important thing is work." And that's the song, like, you know.
It's true. It's 100% true.
But it is, getting your arse in the seat is the hardest thing out of any of this stuff. Like,
yeah, once you have it.
That was a very flamey H, so I apologise about that. I went hardest.
It's the hardest thing I can think of.
Trying to sound like Nico.
Yeah, she does sound like that. Where's she from?
I think it's Sweden, but I'm not sure.
Sweden, because she sounds like a Nazi dominatrix.
She looks like one. statuesque woman.
The,
you know?
The slut staffel, to quote Alan Moore. "Me and my elite slut staffel."
But, yeah, so, yeah, no, you're right, though. It is, like, look, I would love to produce more stuff, like, you know, and, like, funny enough, I had the, I did a first stand-up set I'd done in a while at the Fla in Drogheda.
Yeah.
At Aidan Shields.
How'd that go? Everybody has said that was amazing. Everybody always says the Fla is amazing, and I never go.
I mean, it was, I was only down for our set. I probably wouldn't have been down otherwise, like, because it was direct, I had to go straight from work, and it's one of those things, you're like, Yeah, you know, no, but once you,
it's the hardest like, thing.
Once you get there, it's great. That's the fucking annoying thing. Like, just like that one little hurdle of like, yeah, I'm tired and I just want to go home and sit on the couch, but no, I'll go to the thing, you know.
And then
it's the hardest like thing. Once you're at the thing or sitting in front of your computer, whatever it is you want to do, then you're off to the races.
And like, the worst thing is when you have the whole thing, you're really in the form and you have it all built up in your mind, you get there and you're like, oh.
Yeah, that happens.
It happened to me on Friday night. I went out for a thing with work people. I went out for a meal, like, and because somebody's leaving our team. So we kind of went out, two people actually are leaving our team. So we went out for a sort of a work thing. And we went to the Spotted Dog.
Oh, I love the Spotted Dog.
It's awesome. I want to try their vegan burger.
It's nice. It's really nice.
Two people had it.
It's got like chestnuts and stuff in it. It's really good.
Yeah, it's beetroot and chestnut.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not super...
I had the Fit Fry in there the other day.
What's the Fit Fry?
It's a fry up, with turkey sausages and turkey bacon, poached eggs. It's nice. It's really nice.
It's tough to make turkey.
Also, you don't have to have it. You can have the regular fry. But I would recommend breakfast or brunch or whatever you want to call it in the Spotted Dog. It is amazing. Yeah. Proper Clonakilty black pudding as well.
Oh, I love that.
Really nice. Really nice.
I love pudding. Do they have white pudding?
No, actually, they don't.
I get the feeling white pudding doesn't get the respect, but I really like white pudding.
Most of the time I prefer it, but this black pudding, I think it's the real fucking stuff.
Real fucking deal.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Anyway.
They seem to go to great lengths to source the food properly. This is meaningless to most of you, I'm sorry, but I'm just telling
you. However, if you are in Dundalk, have a meal at the Spotted Dog. Turns out I know the guy who's opened it.
He's familiar. Yeah, he definitely looks familiar.
I worked with him in the cinema. He's a very nice fella. He's
super cool.
But what I was going to say... Yeah, I went out and then after... I had it all in my head. Yeah, we're going to go out for a meal. We're going to hit the town. It's going to be great. And I kind of psyched myself up for it. And then the meal happened and everybody just kind of evaporated. And I was like, anybody heading out?
Friday's a tough one. I don't like going out on a Friday.
It probably is, but that's the way it was. And then I was like, last fucking chance saloon. Sinead was like, text Niamh. And I was like, yeah, fucking great advice, you flat leavers.
Yeah, text your girlfriend.
So I texted my girlfriend. I was like, yeah, but I'd already told her I was heading out to a work thing. So I texted her, and she quite rightly said, I'm sat here for the night. I'm in for the night. Fuck off. So I was like, all right.
So would you trot on home? Or
yeah, get back here.
A few cans?
I'm drinking them now. On the way home, I bought a box of cans. I had one, which I finished up in bed and fell asleep before I came down to another one.
It doesn't... That happens to me on a Friday. I have all intentions, like, oh, a few cans, BBC4, like, or whatever. And then I have like one, and then I go, actually, I'm a bit full. I'm to sleep. And like, because my tolerance is so low, I stuck on the telly the other night, and I got Trumbo like 20 minutes in or whatever, and I watched the rest of it.
I hear it's good.
And it is good. Bryan Cranston's good in it. I find that like a beer or a glass of wine or something just like sort of quietens down a lot of this upstairs stuff for long enough to relax and watch a film, like, you know.
Yes, why would...
But it's like, but one's
that's what
kind
it's
of
for.
But what I feel like is that one, if you want to watch a film and space out a little bit, one is kind of, one's nice. It just kind of, it mellows you out a little bit, like, you know.
Yeah, you have to be able to put your finger in the air, like, and know where it's going.
Yeah.
Like last night. On the second whiskey, I was like, I'm not going to be able to drink myself into this thing.
But you danced yourself in.
Danced myself.
But what I was going to say was that I've been reading about Lou Reed and his like days like churning out songs as a sort of assembly line or whatever.
Yeah.
I knew I had this gig coming up, so I used all my break times and stuff at work, and our team leader was away, so there was things where we would usually have team meetings here and there. There was all free time, so I sat down and wrote stand up with all that
free time.
And what do you mean?
Just free time.
Well, it was just like, it's in the schedule. If it's in the schedule, you have to take it. So it's just like, I have an hour now that where nothing's expected of me.
Right,
I'm going to go down to the wee quiet canteen and I'm going to write, like, you know.
Okay, fair.
So I literally like wrote bits like out word by word, like, and crossed things out and fixed them. And then I had a set. I had a really good set at this thing in the flat.
It went well?
It went relatively well, yeah.
Fucking, I say this every year, but next year I'm
definitely go on the fucking flight.
But this is the thing. It is, like, it's the hardest thing in the world to do is to get your arse in the chair to do the thing.
Yeah, but
you never regret it. Even if you don't get where you wanted to get.
Oh, to do
like,
the thing, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But,
Sorry to interrupt you. I was supposed to be background murmur noise.
Yeah.
No, you're right, you're right. Yeah,
so.
Sure.
But the Velvet Underground. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go on.
I was just going to say.
No, after you. Sorry.
They do the album with Nico. They tour around as part of the Exploding Plastic Inevitable, which was a film and light show. They would literally like play a set, and Andy Warhol would screen films on them while they were playing. And there was like a light show and stuff. And then there was people dancing around with whips and whatnot. It was kind of like a whole production, like, you know.
This sounds...
It was
pretentious.
Yeah, but that's a given. Look, if for something to be cool, it has to be a little bit pretentious.
Does it?
Yes. And then... yes,
end of discussion.
Even like Springsteen's pretentious. And it's like, I'm telling the stories of the working class. It's like, oh, are you?
Yeah, okay.
You're fucking millionaire cunt.
You millionaire. Not one of these millionaire cunts.
But, after a while, that all falls apart. And they didn't want Nico in the band in the first place. Go ahead.
A nightclub in a building site in Amsterdam. Where they screened things in the nightclub.
And how did you like it?
It was amazing.
Did it make you feel decadent?
No, it made me feel out of place. But it was...
Everybody was decadent?
Yeah, but I don't regret going. We shouldn't have been there. This was not tourist Amsterdam.
But that's
this was cool. Somebody who spoke to us in Dutch at the door. And
so you accidentally stumbled into some fucking Warhol-esque...
Only after we were told to fuck off from another place. That we made the mistake of fucking talking to locals, like, and asking them where's the cool places to go. And the first place they told us to go...
I think we've talked about this, yeah. We
probably have. The first place they told us to go was... I'll never forget it. I'll never forget the name. Donson by Jonsson. And we showed up at Donson by Jonsson.
It's like a joke name, isn't it?
Yeah. It was. And we showed up at Donson by Jonsson. And they told us to fuck off.
Is that
not for
Dancing
tourists.
And Benton,
Dancing by Jonsson.
Oh, okay.
So we went, all right, next place. And we got a taxi way out to this building site. Where there was the most... fucking Eyes Wide Shut nightclub I've ever been in my life.
Was there actual happenings?
Oh, no.
People getting naked or anything? Or?
No, just video projected on every wall of a woman running terrified through a forest. And sort of techno music.
There's no 80s set.
There's no ABBA. No ABBA medley.
No Living on a Prayer or anything. No. Just actual Living on a Prayer.
Just like, I'm like, wow.
But what was I going to say? So yeah, they do, the next, all that falls apart and they're left just as what they were when they started. They're just left with the Velvet Underground, just the four key members. And they make what is possibly the only pure Velvet Underground album. Because after John Cale leaves, and then after the next one, Maureen Tucker's not on it. So they're left with what is probably...
They were fucking shedding.
Well, this is the thing. It didn't last very long, you know. So it is probably the only actual pure, honest-to-goodness Velvet Underground album. It's called White Light, White Heat, and this is the title track. White light, white light, go on, this is the fine light. White light, hell, so no, I'm gonna make me go blind. Oh, white heat, it tickles me down to my toes. Ooh, helpless, why not have it through the nose? White light, go on, this is for my brain. White light. Oh, why that is gone, that be the same. Oh, why did it tickle me down to my door? Oh, why that I sit now, goodness knows, do it. I truly do love, watch that stuff to itself in. Watch that side, no, it's not gonna be dead and right. So, the thing that I like about that, particularly that song, White Light, White Heat, is that it's really obviously steeped in old rock and roll. Like, there's that kind of fucking Jerry Lee Lewis piano on it. It's two chords, and it's like backing vocals, white light, white light. And then, but the lyrics are about amphetamine.
Yeah.
You know, so, and it's noisy as fuck, like, you know, it's...
I like that he shows he can always in all of those albums he shows that he could do that if he wanted to. There's just enough there to say, I could be a fucking pop princess if I wanted to be, but I don't want to
be. He could have been
there's a bit of that in Ricky Bowie Nelson as well,
or someone like, you know. Yeah, well, Bowie maybe managed to sweeten it better.
Yes, you're right.
Which is why Lou Reed will always be the cooler choice, because Bowie did make concessions to the marketplace.
I don't hold that against him. I'm not saying I did either.
But okay, I'm just saying, that's why Lou Reed is. It will always be cooler. I'm sorry.
Bowie got name checked in the Black Klansman.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. It's
because it's set in the 70s.
It's set in the 70s. Yeah. It's a good film, by the way. Anybody wants to see it? It's quite good.
Yeah, I want to see it. I might go and see it during the week, actually, when it's cheaping.
Yeah, it's worth a watch. It's probably not going to set your world on fire, but it's
something
it's
a bit fucking different, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not. There's no fucking superhero in it.
Did you cave on what's it, Ant-Man?
No, I'm not caving on that. I'm not going to see any more of those Marvel films. I'm not doing them anymore.
Fair enough.
It's not even tough. Like,
welcome to the gang. It's not that many of us, and people don't like us very much.
The bulk face is the wrong way. I'm sorry, the one.
No, it's all right. No, it's just it was starting to get dark.
Yeah, Daddy tried to put on my mood. Kitchen light, and my kitchen lighting is pretty much mood lighting. The thing is, I have like 3 bulbs for those that I haven't put in, but I will. I will do that. So, Lou Reed's significance, right? He's cool. Fair enough. What musically, where does he fit?
Well, they brought that kind of weird discordant thing to rock and roll music. They did it very briefly, it has to be said, because after these 2 albums, that 3rd Velvet Underground album after John Cale leaves the band, all of a sudden all the songs are very soft.
And I might like it best. That's loaded, see, you didn't like it?
That album when. Oh no, the 3rd one is just the self-titled one with Candy Says on it, and we
swapped it before, and I did like it.
I thought you didn't like it at the time.
No, that's the one that I found myself dancing with a bowl of Fruit and Fibre, and I thought, oh shit, I think I like this.
Fruit and Fibre.
Yeah, I like Fruit and Fibre. Sue me.
No, so do I. But it's just an odd image.
It's a pensioner's fucking cereal, really. Isn't it?
I like it. I like bran flakes.
I couldn't eat. Well, it is just bran flakes with some fruit in it, isn't it?
Nuts
and nuts. Yeah,
nuts. But they're slightly lighter. They're slightly lighter flakes. They're not the same.
Fair play, because I can't see myself going through a whole bowl of bran flakes.
I enjoy bran flakes. I'm sorry.
That's so weird. Man. What about all bran?
No, I can't be doing all bran.
Do they still make all bran?
You know what? They may not. I haven't seen them around around that much.
I'm not following the whole cereal.
I dip in and out because we don't have it in the house. I was a connoisseur, but now, I'm not. You know.
Because we don't food.
Yeah, I eat proper food now. But it was one of those things that when I was a kid, we always sort of, the cereal aisle, we would get there and I'd be like, oh, look at all this. And then it'd be like, no, Rice Krispies, let's get out of here. Like, you know.
Can we get Ricicles?
No.
So as soon as it was.
Sugar on your Rice Krispies.
So as soon as it was up to me, like that was like my first like fucking entry into adulthood, like, you know, when I was living on my own, it was like, alright, I get to decide what fucking cereal we get now, like, you know.
And then you discover that Aldi do crunchy nut cornflakes that are as good as crunchy nut cornflakes.
They're better.
And yet, half the price.
Yeah. I remember being, obviously Kat is very concerned with what we eat, like, and processed food and stuff. Honestly, it doesn't yield any better results. You just think about it more and stress about it more, and you still end up eating the same shit everybody else does. But I remember being in the supermarket with her in the States and seeing a dude on his own doing his shopping in the cereal aisle, and I was just like, that's fucking freedom. The cereal aisle on your own, that's magic.
That's Rock the Planet reunion freedom, but sometimes it's worth giving up a little bit of freedom for a little bit of structure, like... You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a trade-off. I accept it's a trade-off, and to each his own, I'm willing to make a slight trade-off.
Yeah, no, I get you, and you're right. But at that time, I was like, fucking rock on, brother.
So White Light and White Heat, is the only pure Velvet Underground album.
I would say. It was the one where they were left to their own devices. It was the last one before people started leaving. Obviously, Nico was kind of edged out in a fairly mean way, I think. Like, you
oh,
know.
Really?
Why? Yeah, Lou Reed was situation? Like, stopped writing songs for her and started being really shitty with her. Like, you know. Now, they were also all fucking each other. Like, you know, so... you know,
it's a tough thing to yeah, I mean, all this free love stuff is well and good, but
I don't know if love is necessarily the right word for it.
Well, exactly. I mean, there's a politics to sex that is exhausting in its own way. Like,
yes,
but it's very. I just thought of the Flight of the Conchords joke, you know, the one where they're talking about love triangles and bands.
And, oh, I think so.
You know, it's a Fleetwood Mac. You get yourself into a Fleetwood Mac situation. Although they did produce some of their best music during that time. Oh, yeah, rumours. Nah, it's bloody true.
That's funny.
They also had an identical Michael Jackson joke, which, well, it was a sort of a Quincy Jones joke nominally, but it was like, he's one of the greatest music producers of all time. What did he name some of the stuff he worked on, Brett? Michael Jackson's Off the Wall. Whew! You're telling me. Off the planet.
I was in the shop the other day and Rock With You came on. I hadn't heard that in a while. I was like, that's a fucking tune.
What's just Rock With You?
I wanna rock with you all night. Dance you through to the sunlight. I think that's on Off the Wall, isn't it?
Is it? Possibly.
When we feel that heat and we can ride the boogie.
I was in, last week I was in Isle de France.
Dailda.
And they always have like MTV on, unless there's football on, they always have MTV on the thing. And what do you call it was on? It's amazing how much Michael Jackson music there was, and you just don't think of it anymore. They had that, you know, Leave Me Alone.
Oh, I like that one, yeah.
I was listening to a podcast, so I had the podcast and I could hear the music because there was no conflicting music. Like,
is that Just Stop Dogging Me Around? Yeah, and it's got a cool video, like stop motion animation video.
Well, he was very good at the old videos, was Michael.
Yeah, memorable videos.
Not necessarily enough to redeem him.
Well, yes, no.
It all depends.
It doesn't really hold up in court. But look at these videos you made, Your Honor. They entertain millions.
Anyway, listen. Lou Reed was pre-video. I bet you he would have fucking... I bet you the Velvet Underground would have had some interesting videos.
Well, they probably would have... Andy Warhol probably would have made them. And they probably would have been 8 hours long.
Esoteric.
Yeah, to say the least. Say. So, yeah, so this is... This is like... I think this is the purest Velvet Underground stuff, and then that's when you get shit like Waldo Jeffers had reached his limit. It had been 3 weeks since Marsha had written, and then it's like boom, boom, boom in the background, and John Cale reading out like this short story that Lou Reed wrote.
It's interesting now that you tell me he was Welsh, because I thought that was like some kind of deliberate Dylan Thomas reference, but. The 60s was weird, wasn't it? Because you don't think of Dylan Thomas and the Velvet Underground as being the same thing. And yet, the first thing my head went to when I heard that song was, oh, it's a kind of Dylan Thomas-y thing.
Are there recordings of Dylan Thomas that are well known then?
I think I'm basically thinking of Richard Burton reading Under Milkwood. I love Under Milkwood. I'd nearly swap Under Milkwood.
I think I tried to read it.
I went to see it. It's the... Sorry, you were looking around for the source of noise.
I just heard noise, yeah.
It's the rain hammering off the exhaust for the heating.
Oh, okay.
So it sounds like it's coming in, but it's not. I fucking hope. No, it definitely is. But, I see you. It's worth seeing live under Milkwood.
Oh, okay.
It's worth seeing performed. It's, it's one of those things where you kind of... Well, it's the story of the night of a village, I suppose. A village overnight, and you go sort of looking at people's dreams and then looking at people's lives, and they all kind of intersect. And it's very interesting. When they launched... When they did up the Tawn Theatre here... Oh, fuck. What, 20 years ago?
15
Oh, it's not. It's not the Tawn Theatre for 20 years, for sure.
No, but they did it up and they put new seating in and everything. Oh, okay. And the first thing they did was they got a professional director.
I like that little theatre. I saw Zoe, what's her name? Zoe Conway and Donald Lennon.
Oh, are you doing it downstairs or upstairs?
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
I think it was upstairs.
They got all of the different amateur groups in the town in, and they did. And this was before I started. This kind of made me get into it. I showed up sight unseen to an advertisement in the Argus.
For an audition?
No, not for that. But after I saw that, they had all the amateur groups in the town and they got a professional director in and they did Under Milkwood. And I just thought, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. I love Under Milkwood. I really do. That's another one. I'm going to put that on my list for future swap. Future swapping. But, so how did I get to that? The 60s was a weird time. All that stuff was sort of floating in the same fucking slosh tray, wasn't
it? But that's before fucking genres. People started showing up with genres.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And then...
Yes.
There are, like, nothing annoys me more than bands who are like, yeah, we're a punk band. 1, 2, 3, 4. Na-na-na-na-na-na-na. There we go, here's another punk song for you. 1, 2, 3, 4. Na-na-na-na-na. You know, and you're just like, what the fuck are you doing? Like,
we are Sex Bomb and we're here to play music and make you feel sad and stuff.
But I mean, once you start being like, oh, this is my genre, I write punk songs, and then someone comes in with a different song and you're like, oh, that's not punk, we can't do that. You're
just like, exactly.
How is that, like... You know, like, yeah.
If you have a perfect... If you're in a punk band and you write the perfect fucking... fucking doo-wop song, why deny the world the perfect doo-wop song?
Yeah.
Just because you're a punk band.
But it's also going to come out different because you're a punk band.
And it'll be something interesting. That I will say that. That is very true of the Velvet Underground.
And you can hear doo-wop in the Velvet Underground.
Weird stuff. Yeah, you can.
Honey, I found a reason. You know that song...
I found a reason to keep living. And you know the reason, dear, it's you. And I've walked down life's lonely highways, hand in hand with myself. And I realize how many paths have crossed between us.
I do believe you are.
I was literally listening to Loaded, lying on my bed listening to Loaded this morning. It's the last album I listened to, but also I kind of like it the best for whatever
reason. Sweet Jane is on it. Sweet Jane is one of my
Sweet
favorite
Jane
songs
is an amazing song.
Of all time.
Standing on the corner, suitcase in my hand, jacket's in his corset, Jane is in her vest, and me, I'm in a rock and roll band. Huh. Riding a Stutz Bearcat, Jim. You know, those were different times. All the poets, they studied rules of verse, and those ladies, they rolled their eyes.
It's easier to listen to than any of the others.
Well, it's basically a Lou Reed solo album at that point. And also, well, actually, you know, what happened was, this album is the last one with everybody in it. Right. All the original fucking weirdos, you know.
Yeah.
So after this, John Cale leaves.
It is weird.
Yeah.
But there's something very medical about it.
Well, this is the thing. I know what you're talking about. There's Lady Godiva's operation.
Yeah, but even that one we were talking about with John Cale narrating, where it's just really just kind of him narrating a short story to music.
Yeah, and it's on, when you listen to the original version of it, music's on one side and the talking's on the other. So the thinking was that you could just listen to the music if you wanted to, turn your balance to the left or the right, or you could just listen to the story.
Very clever.
So, but at a certain point in his teens, Lou Reed had electroshock therapy. No one's even really 100% sure why he had it. Like, he maintained for years that it was because his...
Danny.
What?
Danny.
What?
Well, nobody's sure why he had it.
Well, this is what I'm... But you see, he lied about it.
Fucking parent.
But yeah, they know, you obviously.
Try anything. Whatever you need. Well, like,
basically, he studied in NYU for a semester, and apparently something happened to him where I read an interview with his sister, and she said they basically had to go and drive to get him one night, and they brought him back, and he was, like, basically catatonic. Something happened to him. And basically, he was in his room for, like, a week or something, and then his parents signed him up for courses of electroshock therapy. Now, he maintains that it was because he was gay or bisexual or, you know, whatever you want to call it. Like,
yeah, omnivorous.
Yeah. But his sister maintains that his parents weren't really like that, you know. So he had some kind of a breakdown in his teens, his late teens. And he never was, you know, it sort of dismantled him a little bit.
I think, like, a lot of that, the problem with a lot of that is... it's so subjective. It's funny, you know that thing I said I wanted to swap with you and I never did, that lecture about Walt Disney, because it's gone off the internet.
Yeah,
there is a very interesting bit in that where the guy, and this is kind of why I trust that guy, he tends to be more evenly balanced, you know. He's not some kind of Nazi anti-Semite, but he's not necessarily a very nice man, you know. It's but he does have this thing where he's going through the stories Disney told about his childhood and how hard it was and how, you know, cruel and austere his life was. And he does kind of bring up, now, Walt Disney had several siblings, none of whom, all of whom say, it wasn't that bad. It was all right. Like, it wasn't different from any of our
friends.
Have
you seen the Tom Hanks, Emma Thompson?
No, is it good?
It's, yeah, it is very good, yeah, but there is a bit in that where he comes to London to see, fucking whatever name is, the wrote Mary Poppins, and he talks about, having to deliver fucking newspapers in his bare feet in the snow or something, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So a lot of that was exaggerated.
Well, you kind of don't know. Shit, it is coming down outside.
It is, yeah.
You kind of don't know, but the point is, it's kind of your own private fucking... It's in your own head how bad you want to take that shit, like. You know what I mean? Maybe the same thing might have seemed completely awful.
I'm supposed to buy a raincoat today. There's a sale. There's a sale on in that place down towards the Long Walk. I fucking forgot all about it. Anyway, sorry. And I'm working till 6:30 tomorrow as well.
Such is life, Dan.
Yeah, anyway.
It's kind of in your own head. Maybe, you know, his sister's like saying our folks weren't like that, but he could have built it up in his own head, like, and that was enough. You know what I mean? Maybe, you know, Disney's fucking siblings say, you know, it really wasn't that bad, but he built it up in his own head. There's not that clear a line between
clever and stupid.
It's the fine line between clever and stupid. No, between, you love to jump on people and catch people. People love to get to jump on other people and catch them in a lie. But maybe it's not a lie. Maybe it's just in your own head. You kind of, you know, if you build it up to such an extent that you are absolutely terrified of the idea of telling your folks that you are fucking gay or bi or whatever, and you have some kind of breakdown, you push them into a situation where they're like, well, Jesus Christ, he's had a breakdown, try whatever you need to try, you know.
Yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
And then it's there in the album, man. It's a very sort of,
there's a lot of
weirdly medical album.
Yeah, no, there absolutely is a lot of medical stuff in it.
It's a good album, though, I have to say.
Oh, yeah, no, it's the weirdest one for sure.
Yeah,
and it's got fucking Sister Ray on it,
but it's also the shortest one.
It's the shortest one, but it's got the last track on it is 15 minutes long.
I didn't realise Sister Ray was that long a song, because it's...
It's brilliant. I listen to that, there's probably at least once a month when I'm walking into work and I'm just like, I need Sister Ray this morning to fucking, you know. Fucking tell the inside, they cooking for the down fight. Who's standing at this way on? I'm searching for my main line. I said I couldn't hit it sideways. I said I couldn't hit it sideways.
God, just that sister is here. Moving on.
That's what's great about this band, because you can have the, if you're so inclined, you can have the 7.5 minute fucking audio nightmare experience of the whole thing, or you can knock it off after the singing's done and it's a perfectly fucking serviceable little rock and roll song, you know.
It is
about sucking on a ding dong,
sucking on a ding dong, I couldn't hit it sideways. But Dan, did that need to be fucking the best part of 18 minutes long?
Well, this is the thing though, like, after a little while, like, it's fucking hypnotic, like, you know, because it's just those chords. I mean, the rhythm changes a little bit, but all this kind of noise is all sort of washing in and out. All the instruments, you can tell there's nothing, like, usually when in the 60s when they would record instruments to for separation, they would put these big boards in between all the instruments so that you would control over the end of it. You could turn up the drums and it's not necessarily turning up leakage from the guitar amp into the drum microphone, like. But you can tell there's none of that shit going on there. Everything is just going into every mic and it's all, you know, it's all just this wash of noise, like, you know. And even you, I'd say even listening to the way Lou Reed's singing that, I'd imagine half of the of what you hear from the instruments is going into the fucking vocal mic. I'm sure they've no control over any of it. Apparently the engineer on this album, when they were doing that song,
shot himself.
No, he pressed record and just said, "Look, I'm not listening to this. I'm gonna go and have a cup of tea upstairs, like in the canteen. Like, just give me a shout when you're done, and I'll come down and press stop. Like, you know,
because
he was just like, I don't want to fucking listen to this. Like, you know,
he didn't hear it.
No, he just came down and pressed stop at the end. Like, you know,
he didn't hear what they were doing. What are they doing?
What do you mean?
What is?
How do you do that?
What?
What you just did? Is that your tongue?
Yes, my tongue.
Fuck, that's weird.
What are they saying? It's like a snapshot of
it's
craziness.
Like, have you ever read Last Exit to Brooklyn?
No.
It's very similar to that.
Okay.
It's like a story of a load of weirdos meeting up and fucking each other, like, you know, and then something going wrong. So doesn't someone get shot at the end of the song? Doesn't a sailor shoot somebody?
Oh yeah, possibly.
So it's it's basically like, but all of these things are.
I know I was
bitching about fucking Alex Turner being like, I'm not interested in your short stories, but I am interested in Lou Reed's short stories.
Well, Lou Reed was a man. Look, he walked it like he talked it, didn't he?
Yeah. And he wasn't he wasn't trying to hide behind, oh, we're all on the moon or whatever. He's like, no, we're in fucking Brooklyn. You know.
And we're getting rid up the hole.
You're getting riddled. Riddled with dicks.
Riddled and rid. You're getting rid till you're riddled, son. Welcome to Brooklyn.
Riddled.
Riddled. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Welcome to Brooklyn. It's not like that now.
No. Welcome to Brooklyn, I think, is a Garth Ennis comic.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. Or, I don't want to say it. I haven't read it.
Okay.
Anyway, I don't know. But Garth Ennis, don't read anything Garth Ennis writes.
There is, like, there's a flavour of those kind of New York authors in these songs. Like, and you can just take it for the noise and the, oh, you said ding dong or whatever. Like, but then when you listen to it, you're like, oh, there is actually stuff happening here. Like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think some of these things started off as stories and then they were pared down and down and down until they were 3 or 4 verses of rock and roll lyrics. Like, you know.
That's interesting.
He thought of himself as a writer. Like, he was a writer who played electric guitar, you know?
He doesn't strike me as, it doesn't strike me that way. That's incredible to me. Well, as much as he strikes me, there's kind of whatever you're having yourself in there, like, really. It's all over the place. Like, in a way that maybe should irritate me, but doesn't overly. I like it. But I don't know. It's like what I tell you when you come in. It's like and I might be kind of thankful for this. It's like I'm on the outside of the aquarium and I'm looking into Lou Reed's fish tank.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't think I would survive very long in that
tank. But I love shit like that. I love shit that's like a glimpse into a weird world that I would never want to walk in.
Yeah,
you know, I love reading about it. And through Lou Reed, I went and read half of fucking Venus and Furs, like the novel. But it's written by this guy, his name is Masoch, which is literally where the word masochism comes from.
Yeah.
And it's the same as the song, like the name of the, oh, Severin, don't forsake me. That's all in the book. The guy's name is Severin, like, you know.
Okay.
But
they were quite sort of quite literate chaps.
Well, the Velvet Underground is the name of a novel.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, they literally found a novel called The Velvet Underground, and they were like, that's kind of describes us pretty well, like, you know.
I thought it was... That's weird. I don't want to sound weird. I thought it was a vagina reference.
Well, maybe the title of the novel is, but they just... It was like a paperback that they found... I think they literally found it in a bin or something, like, you know, and it was called The Velvet Underground, and they
it's
were like...
It's not like a famous novel or anything.
No, no, I think it's, like... Trash, you know. Like, maybe, yeah, maybe you can get it on Kindle.
You can get it now, yeah.
Yeah, you probably can. All this shit is on Kindle, like, you know.
Yeah. Be worth it. Interesting. It's interesting. Yeah, I might check it out.
Like, Walk on the Wild Side is a book.
Take a walk on the wild side.
Really? It was like, that's why you wrote the song. He was commissioned at some point to make a musical version of that book, Walk on the Wild Side. And
interesting.
It didn't happen, but he had all these songs written. So basically, the Walk on the Wild Side is about... originally it was about the characters in the book, and it was like, hey, take a walk on the wild side. That's why I always thought...
Are there characters in the book?
No, but he rewrote it then to be about the factory and people in the factory.
People in the factory.
But I always kind of thought that when he goes, and the color girls sing, it's like a stage direction. I always wondered, was that left over from like a little bit of stage direction in the song? Yeah. Like, you know, because it was meant to be for a big show, like, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting. And the colored girls go do 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 do.
But
what do you call it? Was like that father and son, wasn't it? The Cat Stevens song.
It was supposed to be a conversation. That's why fucking, like, when the likes of Ronan Keaton sung it, they never got that element of it right.
You reckon?
Like, it's one verse is the father, the next verse is the son. And
he does change his voice.
But, like...
I listened to that album recently enough. I should have swapped it.
What is it called?
I fucking can't remember. It was so random. I don't know why I listened to it. I googled something and I said, yeah, let's see what it's like.
Is it tea for the Tillman or something like that, or just chocolate
for the Tillman's?
That's on from it. Extras, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's on that album. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It obviously didn't make that big a fucking impact on me. But
yeah, so the Velvet Underground came from the name of this book, and that's why they were just like, Jesus, that's like the perfect name for us.
They're just like magpies. Were we given out about that very thing last time? Picking up random bits of pop culture,
but it's,
sticking it
no,
together.
No, what we were given out about was the conscious way it can be done. Like, no matter what you're doing or what kind of art you're doing, you are a magpie. That's just what you do. But
yeah.
If you're consciously, like someone like Tarantino, going, I'm going to take this scene from that film and that scene from this film, and yeah. You know. Yeah. Whereas if it's all happening by accident, that's fine. Like, you know.
Yeah, fair play. Yeah. And it, by Jesus, this has to be accident. This could not possibly. This is what did Bismarck say? Touching the hem of God's cape as he moves across the stage.
That's
couldn't
cool.
have planned this shit. Like,
yeah, I mean, now to see the thing is, what happens after this album is the serious jealousies start with Lou Reed and John Cale. John Cale wants to take them further into that kind of drone noise, you know, along with Lou's lyrics, because he felt like those two kind of went very well together. You have a scenario now where Lou Reed is starting to write softer songs, maybe with a wee eye to commerciality, like, you know.
There's nothing...
Because they made those two albums and turned the fuck out of it and made no money at all.
Misremembering Transformer, or is it easier to listen to than any of these?
Yeah, well, it's very... Transformer is very polished.
Yeah.
Because Bowie and Mick Ronson produced it. And basically, I mean, it sounds kind of like a Bowie album. It's got all that brass and stuff on it. It's got... Like, it does sound a bit like Hunky Dory.
Anything to John Ronson?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I'm just wondering.
And actually, I think Mick Ronson did most of the work on that Transformer album as well.
Okay.
Like, he does all the guitar and wrote all the string parts and stuff, like, you know.
Oh, cool.
So, but then you can, like, Bowie's all over it as well. You can hear it. Satellite!
That song is...
You played that. Do you remember that?
Sorry?
Do you remember I was playing Satellite of Love at me when I at college?
No, it wasn't Satellite of Love. It was Shelter from the Storm, was it?
No, it was Satellite of Love.
Oh, okay.
I'll never, literally never forget it. I walked somebody home and sort of said goodnight at her doorstep.
And kind of said, no, I have to get back to the lads.
Yeah, I know.
Muppet.
I know.
Satellite's gone up to the skies. Things like that drive me out of my mind. I watched it for a little while. I like to watch things on TV. Satellite of love, satellite of love, satellite of love, satellite of.
Because I remember you coming back and I was just like, what are you doing here? Well, I said I'd come back. And I was like, yeah, but that's meaningless when there's...
and there's Guter in play.
Guter in play.
Why, you brought it up. Meaningless. Oh, you were going to say that's meaningless when it's.
I was just going to say that's Saturday meaningless.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But basically, John Cale leaves because he's like, oh, I can do my own shit, like, and goes off to have a pretty fucking great solo career.
Does he?
Less, I mean, even more under the radar than Lou Reed, like, you know. But a lot of people prefer John Cale's solo stuff to Lou Reed's solo stuff.
Define a lot in this context.
Well, I mean, people who are serious about these things, like, you know, like Lou Reed, his solo career is fucking patchy. Like, there's a lot of amazing albums. There's Transformer, there's Berlin. I like The Blue Mask. I like that album. New York is a great album.
Well, you've got it until you don't.
But he, so basically, the Velvet Underground, apparently, legend has it, apparently they had all the shit that they had. That made the amps all noisy, all got stolen out of the van after a gig or whatever, and that's why the next album is so quiet, because they didn't have all their gear for making all the noise, and also John Cale was gone.
Really?
Yeah. There was a robbery after a gig. Like.
Sometimes I feel so happy. Sometimes I feel so sad. Sometimes I feel so happy. But mostly you just make me mad. Baby, you just make me mad. Linger on your pale blue eyes. Linger on.
So they tore the fuck out of these two albums and made no money.
Yeah.
It doesn't super surprise me.
No.
Why enjoyed it? Like,
yeah, I mean...
I liked it, actually.
They knew they were out on a limb and they knew they were doing something artistically good and they were fucking poncy about it as well, I'm sure. Yeah, like, you know. Yeah, yeah. But eventually Lou Reed is, like, trying to write commercial stuff, even though he's still, like... You know, like Candy Says is quite a nice song, but it's about... someone taking, like, hormone drugs.
Can you say, I've come to hate my body and all that it requires in this world. Can you say,
And that person dies in that song, I think, or died in real life.
There's a lot.
I wonder, is it the same Candy?
There's a
lot. Candy came
from Miami
Island.
Oh no, who came from? Holly came from Miami Island.
Yeah, Candy came from Miami
Island.
The island. In the back room, she was everybody's darling.
Yeah, well, fair play, Candy.
the line that should have got the song banned but didn't because the BBC had no idea what he was talking about. But she never lost her head,
even when she was given head. She said, hey, babe.
He was saying he didn't want to release it as a single. It's his only hit single. He didn't want to release it because he was like, it's going to get fucking banned. And it was like, the BBC just was like, yeah, I see nothing wrong here. And all of a sudden, you have this weird song about fucking blowjobs and transvestites.
You were too weird.
All the smashy and nicey type DJs were all playing it because it was number one, like, you know. And
smashy and nicey.
Lou Reed with Walk on the Wild.
Walk on the Wild Side.
That's what a strange bunch of people.
So I'm going to go for... the thing is, like, even though he was trying to write commercial stuff, he was... there's even, like, that song on the, you know, Some Kinds of Love, you know that song?
Yeah.
And there's that line...
Put jelly on your shoulder. Let us do what you fear most. That from which you recoil, but which still makes your eyes moist. Put jelly on your shoulder, baby.
But, like this, so this is fucking Lou Reed's attempt at writing commercial stuff, anyway.
Like a dirty French novel, combines the obscene with the vulgar.
You love this shit.
Yeah, I do. I love the Velvet Underground.
Yeah, I enjoyed them very much.
Like, if you listen to that, you'll notice that his vocals and his guitar are way up in the mix to the, like, almost exclusion of everything else, because they had the album mixed and he went in when no one was around and just turned up all his own shit and turned down everything else. This is how fucking petty this dude could be, like, you know.
No wonder.
This is why it was never going to work with him and John Cale long term. Like,
no,
you know,
wonder they fell apart. So yeah. How long, beginning to end, how long were they together then?
Like, those two, maybe 3 years, 4 years maybe, like, you know.
It's not long, is it?
No, not really. But, so that album is kind of full of those kind of songs. And there's a guy, and half of it is sung by a dude called Doug Yule. They could bring in another guy to replace John Cale called Doug Yule.
I know him. Is he Scottish?
No, I don't know. Why? What are you thinking?
I think Sean McCreeve did a thing about him.
Oh, really? Yeah, like a singer, like.
Yeah.
Well, he joins the Velvet Underground. This guy, and he sings "Candy Says." Like, that's not Lou Reed singing "Candy Says." That's really? That bloke Doug Yule. So he starts taking over the vocals and stuff, and they have a really at this point. Now, the other thing that fucked everything up with them, they got a really fucking sleazy manager called Sleznik or something like that. Like, that was...
Devious.
Yeah, so they got this manager who's all of a sudden starts thinking, well, if I can get rid of this Cale fucker, then Lou can write these tunes and, like, maybe we'll fucking sell a few records. But then what happens is, you get this deal with Doug.
Is that why you get a manager?
No, of course not, no.
Why?
But not every
manager has to be fucking Colonel Parker, Colonel Tom Parker, but surely you want him to give you some business news.
Yeah, but he should take what you're already doing and find a fucking way. Like, you know, that's what the best managers did.
Dan, what way was, if you were taking that, who are you selling this shit to?
But I mean, like, we all listen to it now.
Sometimes you have been in jobs, because I know I have been in jobs. I am sure you have been in jobs where you're being asked to sell things that are like, I'm pretty sure the people I'm talking to don't want nor need this.
Or know what it is.
Yes. I really think I'm selling these people problems. That's what I mean... I just think there's a... Look, it just sometimes irritates me. People who will not compromise in any way want to make the oddest thing they possibly can and be the most distinctive and then also expect, well, we'll just get a manager and skip this step and then mass appeal.
I don't think that's what anyone was thinking, though. They got this manager and he started thinking, well, Lou's kind of writing this softer stuff. We can sell these records. John Cale is a fucking problem. We need to get rid of that lad, like, you know. Even though he was the coolest looking member of the band, when you see pictures of them, like, you know. But they were like, we have to get rid of that lad with his, like, noise, you know.
All right.
So, but then what happens is, to make up the four of the band, they bring in Doug Yule on second guitar and vocals. And then they're like, the manager is like, oh, this dude will do whatever I tell him to do, like, you know. So we can even get rid of Lou at this point, like, you
know. That's saying something in the Velvet Underground. This dude will do whatever I ask.
But they tried it, though. The last Velvet Underground album, Lou Reed and John Cale aren't fucking on it. Like, it's that's the album Squeeze. That if I'd have known you were going to listen to it, I would have said, "Oh no, don't bother with that." Like, you know,
it's not. Yeah,
it's it's a Velvet Underground album in name only, really. But also, that was the plan. It was like, oh, this dude will just write fucking pop music, and we'll fucking sell this thing.
Why didn't just go and manage the Beach Boys? They weren't
because they didn't want him. Like, you know, you're obviously trying to mold this thing into something that suited him. Like, you know, so so Doug Yule gets brought in. So then by the last album, Loaded, the drummer is gone as well. So it's only Lou Reed and Sterling Morrison left from the original. She didn't necessarily leave. She was pregnant, like, you know. But
it's just it's just a load of instruments laying on the ground.
Lou Reed shooting up. I don't think this transfers the vinyl very well, Lou.
Yeah, we're coming now.
Fair point. The heroines in my blood. Yeah, you did that.
All right. Oh dear, it's a funny old world, isn't it?
But the thing about,
how many people live ordinary lives on heroin?
I'd say there's probably some functional heroin addicts out there. Same as functional alcoholics. And
I heard some of them interviewed once, and because it's like, that's weird, isn't it? Weird to be a functional heroin addict.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like an oxymoron. Like, you know,
yeah, it does a wee bit.
Maybe heroin is probably the toughest one to be functional on.
I imagine.
Because it takes over your whole fucking life. Like, you feel sick if you don't get it. Like, you know, and then when you do get it, it wipes you out, you know. Yeah,
it's a strange one. But I remember hearing it, it was on Shaman Grief again, it was a woman who was, like, living her life, who had a job, who had kids, and she was on heroin all the time.
Jesus.
It's a strange one. I saw the Pope was in I'm not randomly talking, but the Pope for our international listeners.
The Pope was on heroin, go on.
The Pope was on heroin recently in Dublin. The Pope came to Ireland and tried a little heroin. No, okay, stop. Seriously. The Pope came to Ireland and he was in like this halfway place that had different sort of people. I was around my nanny, she was watching him all day yesterday. It was like, I don't know,
must have been so weird for people who were around for the first one for it to be happening again. Like, you know,
he got the crowds again.
I thought I read somewhere that there was way less people than they expected.
There, it wasn't 1979 again, definitely. Yeah. But there was no place that he drove past where there wasn't people like four or five deep.
Oh, okay.
No, he drove kind of around. Like, he did this sort of like 2 mile circuit.
Did he drive too fast? Apparently, were people complaining? That he was moving a lot faster than the.
I couldn't get over it. When he got in the fucking thing, I just happened to be there with Nanny's, and I was kind of watching it with Nanny, and it was like fucking Beatlemania for pensioners. Like, he got into this thing, and it had a big bulletproof glass, the Pope Mobile, which was just the biggest fucking 4x4, like Kardashians wouldn't have a look in, like 4x4, with this big bulletproof glass thing in the front and over the top. And nothing on the sides. Nothing. I was like, are you driving him through the city of Dublin with nothing? There's one wall and a roof on that. I could see three ways immediately of getting to that guy.
I'd say it was pretty heavily policed as well. But still, you could, I suppose, yeah.
I'm sure it was. But I just remember thinking, oh, Jesus Christ, don't let the Pope die in Ireland. This would be just the fucking cherry on the cake, wouldn't it?
Travis McBickle out there, like, you know. Yeah! Dude in a mohawk, like, you know.
But it's so weird, it's so weird. But on the other hand, he did get the opportunity to apologise for all the scandals, so. Book closed on that, thank God, that's the end of that. We don't need to talk about that anymore. Problem solved.
I watched Taxi Driver the other night again. I came in from the pub and it was on telly.
Did it start making sense to you? Yeah,
just fucking just dudes making some good points.
That's what you gotta do.
That film's actually kind of funny. There's some scenes in it that are pretty funny.
I don't recall it.
The scene where he's there with the mohawk trying to talk to the fucking Secret Service guy, that is kind of funny, like, you know.
Oh yeah, maybe. It's a strange one.
He's a misguided lad, this Travis Bickle.
At least that. At least.
It's least of his issues.
Yeah, it's the least of his issues is right.
So,
there's people walking around the world like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder what
I think we know some of them, to be honest.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think I might have talked to one or two of them last night. No.
Luckily, they were sort of Travis Bickles with no direction. Like,
yeah,
you know,
they were kind of...
A bit of direction is a scary thing.
You see, that's the thing. 20 years ago, you could have done with direction. Now, it could only make things worse. I've been a prick. I'm such a prick. Why am I such a prick, then?
I think so. Somebody, these albums kind of read, these last two albums read as sort of essentially like Lou Reed solo albums.
Mm.
But they've got some of my favorite songs on them, like fucking like Sweet Jane. Like
Sweet Jane's
is
a great
fucking
tune.
Stone Cold classic. And the thing is, as well, when you listen to it now, tell me this: did you listen to the Heavenly Wine and Roses version?
What's that?
Because version? See, the thing is, so. After they finished Recorded Loaded, Louis kind of walked away from it before it was finished because there's an album called The Velvet Underground Live in 1969, and it's a recording of the last Velvet Underground gig, and literally it's a funny album to listen to because literally you're listening to it and as he's playing, Lou Reed's parents are literally driving in from Long Island to pick him up directly after the gig and take him home because he's fucking no money, he's like fried, he's no good to anybody, like he's had it with the whole Velvet Underground thing. And it's his last gig with them as that original band. And it's kind of funny listening to it, thinking, yeah, the parents are driving in. He's like going, heroin, and that literally his mother's going to pick him up in an hour from that point, like, you know.
What goes on in your mind? I think that I am falling down. What goes on in your mind? I think that I am upside down.
But to a lot of them, didn't it?
He fried his mind, like, you know.
But a lot of them burned out, like.
Yeah, I mean, how could you not? Like, you're only human.
It's so fucking weird. You forget how new a lot of those drugs were.
Yeah, like, no one knew the damage.
LSD was like invented in, when was it?
It was like used by the army for something, wasn't it?
There's a really good, there's a good documentary on Netflix about that Errol Morris made.
Oh, right.
Wormwood?
The Fog of War guy?
The Fog of War guy, yeah. But it was like, it was invented in the early 50s and then made illegal in 57 and nobody, it hadn't been tested or anything. It was just like, oh, put a lid on that. And then, but it got out anyway and nobody really knew. So it was kind of weird, yeah. Kind of, what can you expect from a lot of them? Like?
Yeah. I mean, like, that's kind of... It's designed to fuck with your head. Like, that's why you take it, you know?
Yeah.
But it's...
yeah.
But he walked away from the album before it was finished. So for years, like, the CD I had when I was a teenager was the sort of compromised version of it or whatever, like...
You're desperate to get the... Desperate to get the historical facts in.
I'm just getting, you know, like, I don't know.
To what extent am I a mere irritation in your Danny O'Hanlon Velvet Underground podcast?
No, because we're diverting and it's good. And this is the last album, so for the last half an hour you can, you know.
I want to talk about the Pope, Dan. That man could have been shot!
God. But anyway, they fucked with, especially Sweet Jane, they fucked with it something serious. Because I bought an album, a live Lou Reed album that came out called American Poet. It was like a CD of a radio session he did, this live gig he did like in the early 70s.
Mm.
And there's a version of Sweet Jane on it. And all of a sudden, at the point where I thought Sweet Jane ended, all of a sudden there's this bit where he starts going, "Heavenly wine and roses seems to whisper to him when she smiles." And I'm like, what the fuck is that? That's not on my fucking CD of Sweet Jane.
Heavenly wine and roses seem to whisper to her when he smiles. Heavenly wine and roses seem to whisper to her.
Oh, of weird little vocal things in that song where he's going, oh, and stuff like that.
Yeah, it was rock and roll, Dan.
I suppose that's true, yeah. It's a great song.
I suppose it is.
But,
it is a tune and a half, yeah.
So
there's a lot of those kind of tunes in the Velvet Underground. It's like I say, it's like he was just saying, you know, I can do this. If I want to do, I could do this.
Yeah, but also, if you think about it, though, it's got that great rock and roll kind of chord sequence. But what's he singing about? Like, it's weird. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's why he was as great as he was in those days, because he was singing about shit no one else sang about, like, you know?
Yeah, I suppose. But was he singing about shit? It was like, niche, like, was it not?
Yeah, but,
the stuff
I mean,
he was singing about. Like,
you have to have that, though, you know?
You do have to have niches. But I'm not going in them. I would be lost. I mean, what am I going to do in an orgy now?
Did it?
make the tea, like. Is everybody all right for...
It's what we were talking about this before, where we were saying, like a threesome is a, or like, you know, whatever, is a fantasy that a lot of people have. But for me, part of the fantasy is that I would be someone who'd be able to do it.
That's terrifying. I couldn't.
No, me neither. I can't be an orgy guy. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah.
I have to get all sorts of robes and lotions.
I feel I have little to contribute to Lou Reed's take on the world, but I find it fascinating to kind of listen to.
Yeah, me too. Like, you're right, I have sort of turned this into a potted history of the Velvet Underground, but you were saying... Like,
I really like that!
But you didn't have... Like, I wanted to... If someone hasn't...
I did slag. I'm saying it now like, oh, how could you take me that way? I literally said it that way. But I was enjoying it. I quite liked it.
Well, I just figured that if someone hasn't heard them before... And people like listening to this podcast. They're getting our usual fucking blend of humor and social commentary. And also, they're getting, like
social
a bit of fucking VU.
Velvet Underground.
Yeah.
Is that what the kids are calling it these days, VU?
Well, that's what Bowie wrote on the back of... Do you ever see the back of Hunky Dory?
No, I did not see
it. And it says, apparently Queen Bitch, you know that song Queen Bitch?
Yeah,
it's basically a Lou Reed impression. Like, that was his... That was him trying to write the Lou Reed song.
Oh, you can kind of...
It's a little bit Sweet Janie, that chorus, chord sequence. Like,
I'm up on the 11th floor and I'm watching the creases below. Father. Whoa, hearts in the basement, the weekends are all time low. Like, he's down on the street and he's trying hard to force his love flow. She's hoping to score where I can't see her letting him go. Look out of her heart, look out of her mind. Well, she's so swissy in a sign in a tie, in a brown golden bibbidi bobbidi hat. Look out, I could do better than that.
And literally in brackets on Hunky Dory it says...
That's weird.
Some VU.
Bibbidi hat. Is that it?
Well, yeah. I thought that's the one. Yeah, I don't think Lou Reed ever said bibbidi bobbidi.
Yeah, all right.
It's a great song though. Like,
it's a tune and a half.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
A great one. Yeah.
But it does, when you listen to it, it does sound a little bit like a fast Sweet Jane in a way, like, you know.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. Yeah.
And then on the album in the back in brackets it says some VU white light white heat in brackets after Queen Bitch. On the track.
What does it say?
It says something about VU and then it says white light, white heat. Like, so obviously he's letting the people who know these things know that, yeah, I'm ripping off Lou Reed a little bit, but what of it?
That was back in the day, Dan.
Yeah.
Couldn't do that now.
No. Some fucking person in a suit would advise you against it.
Yeah. Yeah, but they'd be right also, because some wanker on the internet would make a big deal out of it. Like, it's like, you can't win.
But now the fans are the police of this shit, like, you know.
Yeah, it's not a good
thing.
Too
much power, you lot.
Yeah, it's not a good thing.
No.
If you were all that, if you had all that, if all of you cunts had that great fucking an insight, you'd be making the shit. But you don't, so you're not. People.
But that's basically the end of my history of the Velvet Underground, because that's the last album.
Well, 1970?
69, I think.
Really?
Yeah. It was released in 1970, but I think it was recorded in 69.
The flame that burns white as heat burns white as... That didn't work. It's good but, effort, though. Good no, effort.
You were almost there.
That's the fucking difference between Ustinov and some cunt, then.
But if you listen to Black Angel's Death Song and then you put it against fucking... say a word for Jimmy Brown. You know he ain't got nothing at all. It doesn't even sound like the same band. Like, you know, it had gone way past what they had originally tried to do. Like, you know.
But had they tried to do anything in particular, or were they fucking cat touching the hem of God's cape? Like,
I think they did have some idea of what they wanted to do. Like, John Cale was pretty obsessed with the idea of, like, when Lou wrote a song and played it to him, he would find whatever note could be the drone that would just be like one thing going through the whole song, like, you know. So, but it's effective. Like, the proof is in the pudding, man. It sounds great, you know.
Well, you say that, but then also, I have visions, and maybe this is a prejudiced idea of what the Factory is, but I have visions of him trying every note for 3 days at a time. No, it's just not quite right. Well,
yeah.
Really.
But
really,
they need nothing else to be doing.
What is it that is wrong with this one? What would be different? What would be substantially different if you'd picked a different note?
Well, when you listen to Lou Reed's solo versions of Velvet Underground songs, they're not as good, you know. I don't think they have the same punch to them at all.
I like Loaded the best of those three.
You mean that all the Velvet Underground albums you like Loaded the best?
I think I do.
Well, that's fair enough. Like, it is like it's a Lou Reed album, pretty much. Like, you know, there's no other writers on that album, really. Like, you know, so
okay.
it could be the first Lou Reed solo album. It's not, but it might as well be. Like, you know,
He's a strange one, Lou Reed, isn't he?
Yeah, because he's very highly regarded, but his catalog's fucking patchy. There's some really fucking...
He only died recently.
Yeah, it's 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, stretch it over that length of time, anybody's catalog's patchy. Dylan's catalog's patchy. The only way you can avoid a patchy catalog is to die young.
Or to not try. Well, I think what happened with Lou Reed was I think he just started believing his own shit a little bit and thought, yeah, I am the poet of the... fucking gutter or whatever.
Like, nothing. He was off his face most of his life, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Yeah,
or most of the 70s, anyway.
They used to. It said in the book that they used to cook up the amphetamine tablets in water, and then the drug leaks into the water, and then you shoot the water. But then they were saying that the last cookie, because you cook the same pills a few times, and the last cookie gave them. Where sometimes you would literally just be shooting up water, and it would really fuck with you, like, you know, and it was. You'd just be like, apparently he'd be in bed for a day, like, screaming because he really fucked himself up with it. He really went to the edge now. He was like, yeah, I know everyone, like, oh, like, everyone did their LSD and their drugs and everything, but he really went to the edge of this shit, like, you know.
Yeah.
Because apparently there's something to do with that that heavy speed that changes your fucking bone structure almost. Like, apparently he couldn't smile for a while because his muscles were all fucked up.
I was fucking surprised.
It's crazy, like, you know.
But, I can't... I have dabbled occasionally with mind-altering substances, but I cannot imagine somebody offering me a syringe of anything.
No, it was no
fucking sugar. I could not imagine going, yeah, I'll fucking try it. Like, what? A fucking syringe? Fuck off!
Yeah, it doesn't bear thinking about.
It doesn't bear thinking about. It's a weird thing to do, isn't it? It's a weird thing to do.
Yeah, it's too much, like...
It's too much.
Stupid.
It's crazy.
It's fucking stupid. It really is, like,
it
you know.
It is a wee bit stupid.
And I could, look...
It's all a wee bit stupid, though. Like, eating fucking crazy mushrooms is stupid.
Doing well, I mean, fucking eating bacon is stupid, really. Like, you know, it's, you know...
Yeah. What, even turkey bacon?
It's nice, man. If you're just like... If you fancy a fry-up and you're just like, I just don't fancy the potential heart attack that goes with it, you know.
I've had turkey
Get your
bacon.
Poached eggs, your turkey bacon, your wheaten toast.
What I've done is fried up turkey bacon and cracked a few eggs in on top of it.
Nice.
So you have a turkey bacon omelette, basically.
Oh, that's nice.
Well, yeah, done. It was grand. Thanks.
But it's not the same as a ratio.
No, no, nothing is, like, you know. But I'm sure that's what he's thinking about speed.
When was the ratio invented?
I don't know.
Most, I would be willing to say, most human beings who have ever been alive never tasted a ratio.
No, probably not, because it's an Irish-British kind of thing, isn't it?
It is, actually, yeah.
The rasher. Yes. Because bacon in the States is a different beast altogether. It is. It's crispy and thin. And,
which is
and it's not without its charms, but it's, they're not rashers.
It's not a rasher, no. It's not a rasher. And 9 times out of 10, giving me the choice between the two, I'd pick a rasher. Like.
It depends on what it's with. If you're having it with pancakes or something, then the crispy bacon.
I don't understand that. Why? I don't understand that. With fucking maple syrup?
Oh, it's lovely, yeah.
No, it's not.
It is.
No, that's awful.
Well, yeah, that's okay. You can carry on being wrong. That's all right.
I don't understand that in the slightest.
But sure, what about like smoked rashers or beechwood fucking flavored rashers or all that stuff?
Very tasty.
But sure, it's just, how is it any different?
What do you mean? How is it any different?
How is it any different from putting maple syrup on it?
Well, because maple syrup also contains, like, 3 teaspoonfuls of sugar.
It's fucking sugar and ketchup. Would you put ketchup on your...
Well, now, here's the thing. I wouldn't. A fry with ketchup, to me, does not...
What about brown sauce?
No.
Really?
No, that's what the egg's for.
No, I couldn't be doing without the brown sauce on a fry up now myself.
Oh, no, I couldn't do it. I don't... but I do... I will say it doesn't turn me the way maple syrup turns me.
No, maple syrup and crispy bacon is the business... A little bit of banana.
No.
You're disgusted.
It's not. It's just there's nothing in me is raising its head. None of my little internal palate rabbits are rearing their head up. palate mongooses are standing up on the savannah and sniffing.
That's hilarious. No, maple syrup and bacon.
Maple
syrup. It's the way to fucking go, man. It's nice.
Nice little fry up.
Well, it's different. You know, but you wouldn't sprinkle sugar on a fry-up now, like, you know, but...
But that's what you're doing.
No, you're having it with the pancakes. It's a different...
Yeah,
it's
the pancakes are another problem there in that whole fucking equation.
It's all egg.
Pancakes?
Yeah.
No, it's egg and sugar.
I love pancakes.
I'm not a huge... I love me mom's pancakes. I know how ridiculous that sounds. But they're thin. And they've got raisins in them.
Raisins? Now, that to me, that's way more insulting than the bacon with the maple syrup on it. Raisins in a pancake.
Yeah, naturally, man.
Oh my god, that's the first I've ever heard of that.
What, raisins in a pancake?
Yeah.
Are you crazy?
No, I've never heard of anyone putting raisins in a fucking pancake. Look, no offense to your mum, but I don't want it.
I don't like, she makes plain pancakes as well, but I don't like them.
Maybe you just like raisins.
That's possibly true.
Raisins are a thing I can't really eat on their own. In and of themselves, I'm not too interested in a raisin.
But you know, what about chocolate-covered raisins?
No. Throw it in a bowl of muesli now, and I'm on board, but not in and of just themselves.
A little hit of fruitiness. I would go through chocolate-covered raisins, no bother.
No, can't be dealing with that.
Lou Reed must be turning in his grave.
Is his head... We're literally talking about like the most like smack adult fucking gutter poet going, and we're like, Jesus, no, I couldn't have maple syrup and bacon. that's a bridge too far now for me.
I can't
maple syrup orgies need both out.
Maple syrup at an orgy. Jesus, just imagine the whole time I'd just be thinking.
Yeah, I couldn't divorce myself from the proceedings enough to sort of be like, yeah, we're doing it. I'd be like, this is gonna pool and dry.
Do you remember Paths to Freedom, the RTE
yeah, sitcom? They made a film out of it, didn't they?
Yeah, Spin the Bottle. Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I saw the whole thing, but I remember it.
I liked it, I enjoyed it. But they made a follow-up then that had the same, it was a completely different set up, but the same actors and writers and stuff. And one of those was like an orgy guy. But he was an orgy guy who used to just sort of stand in the kitchen and talk to people while people were coming and going from all the sex.
I think I remember that, actually.
That'd be me in an orgy.
Well, I would probably make me excuses and get out. As if anyone's listening to me. There's all this activity. I'm like, sorry,
excuse me.
Sorry, Michael, or Niall. Scary arse bobbing up and down. Niall, I might go, actually.
Can't have anybody seeing my hairy arse. Anyway, yeah. See, this orgy's not for me, anyway.
No response. I'll just assume you heard me, and I'll
leave a note in the fridge.
Yeah. Some of that maple syrup left if you're going to use it in the morning with the bacon.
Anyway, let this be a fucking testament to Lou Reed that I am the least orgy guy on the planet, and yet I enjoyed those albums. I enjoyed listening to that music.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
Hmm. Yeah, I would go so far as to say it's great.
And the thing about it is well, it's four albums. It's contained. It's like there's a start and an end to the life of the Velvet Underground. It's a thing you can kind of
has a half life.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, it's not like fucking Game of Thrones or something where there's no end in sight. It could take over your whole life. This is four albums. Get stuck in. It's
too much.
Did you see Stuart Lee's special?
Yeah.
It was so funny. Did you ever see him talking about Game of Thrones? Yeah. And he's like, he reads out this thing and he goes, I don't even fucking know what that means.
I copied it off the back of a mug.
Game of Thrones. Peter Stigman's Lord of the Rings. So funny. Alan Moore was on that as well.
What?
Alan Moore was on Lou Reed's Stuart Lee's comedy special. Did y'all see him?
Where was he on?
Do you know on Stuart Lee's Comedy Vehicle where people, Chris Morris interviews him and gives him shit? Alan Moore did it on the Content Provider special.
Oh my god, I didn't see that. No.
He comes on, I missed the start. I didn't see the start.
Okay, I watched it in segments on YouTube, so maybe there was stuff cut out.
Yeah, Alan Moore is on it. Alan Moore comes on in the middle and again at the end and interviewing Stuart Lee.
Stuart Lee would hate that I just said that, wouldn't he?
Well, I mean, we've no fucking choice because we don't, like, have the iPlayer. So, like, I missed it when it was on telly, so...
Oh, yeah, sold out to the Biebs, Stuart. Fuck you, Stuart.
He already did the show with them, so maybe they had some kind of rights to it. But it's like, yeah, put the fucking thing out on DVD so we can watch it. Like,
yeah, I would buy it. I would happily buy it.
I've been watching those little clips on YouTube because...
He's not on Netflix, is he?
Stuart Lee's Comedy Vehicle was up on Netflix for a while.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. No, not all of it. Yeah, you're right.
Welcome to Stuart Lee's Comedy Vehicle. Let's off-road.
What are we talking about? The Velvet Underground.
Yeah.
All right.
I can't believe you missed Alan Moore on that. I thought that would be like...
I'm going to have to go back and see.
I can't remember what he said. Like, it was in the same vein as Chris Morris. Like,
I bet it's not as funny as when Chris Morris did it. I bet. I love Alan Moore. I was listening to a cunt. I got into this Movies with Mikey stuff. I don't mean to call him a cunt. I mean, he's just a guy on YouTube that I...
I've started watching. There's a guy called the Nostalgia Critic that I watch a little bit.
Oh, I think I've seen a couple of
those. Yeah, he's a bit over the top. But he picks weird things to do reviews of. Like, he did a whole thing about the Turtles, and I was into the Turtles when I was a kid, so it was interesting to watch it, you know.
Yeah, that's cool. Movies with Mikey is a bit like that, and I really like him. He's American, so just in case anybody posts this back to his Twitter feed or something, I meant cunt affectionately. Understand that that's something...
As in, decent old cunt.
A decent old cunt. Just something we do.
What kind of stuff does he do? Is it all Marvel, or...
Oh, no. There's lots of different things. He did Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Oh, cool.
This is one of those potential swaps. Just get ready for that one.
When I think about watching a film again, sometimes I prefer to watch someone talk about it than watching the whole thing again. Like, something from my childhood. Like, you know, like, I'm never going to go and watch all the fucking Turtles films again. Well, but I like watching this guy talking
about it. You're doing this podcast with me.
Well, I liked the first Turtles film. I thought it was really good.
I haven't watched them since I watched them.
I think it stands up. Fair I saw point. It... Maybe 5 or 6 years ago now I watched it, and obviously it's got a fucking talking rat in it, like, you know, so it's gonna be whatever, but I was watching it thinking this is like a weird, like, it almost looks like an indie movie, but it just so happens that the Turtles are in it.
Well, it was an indie comic, it was a parody comic. Yeah.
Well, it's all about, it was a piss take of Daredevil, wasn't it?
Yeah, because
the foot is like the, is it the hand?
The hand, yeah. And they're mutants because the X-Men were really starting to take off, so everybody was becoming a mutant. Like,
yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Kind of like a mutant, like those X-Men. So they did this parody comic. So maybe that doesn't seem as crazy. But Movies with Mikey did... what was I even fucking saying?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. He slagged off Alan Moore. And when I say he slagged off Alan Moore, he made a... He made an off the cuff remark in quite a long YouTube video that you could interpret as being mildly impatient with Alan Moore. So that's enough for me and Mikey to be like.
What did he say?
He said, "Oh well, Alan Moore didn't like it, but the older Alan Moore gets, the you know." And I'm like, really?
But you need people like Alan. Look, I've read bits and bobs of Alan Moore, but I, as a personality, I fucking love him. I love listening to him being interviewed. Like, you know,
he's very
like good. He's so fucking intelligent and cranky. You know, and it's just like he, like listening to Alan Moore makes you want to read. It makes you want to go and read the stuff he's talking about, so you don't feel like such a dunce. Like, you know,
yeah, I love Alan Moore. Listen, but look, me and
Stuart Lee's kind of the same. Stuart Lee makes me want to be. More of a reader, like more, go and read more things that aren't just.
There's a rat in my kitchen. Yeah. It turned me into a big reggae guy for a while. No, it didn't. I look, yeah, it's that's good. Those guys, all good.
And what is it? I love the end of that Game of Thrones bit where he goes like, "Grow up, you stupid Warhammer twats."
He's very angry in that
special. He is, yeah. But he has said on his website that like he's not going to tour like that again. He says he's done with doing big tours. He said that he's not a very healthy dude, so I think he's horribly out of shape, and it takes a lot out of him. Like, you know, and
he looks like
he can fix it.
If you go through the comments underneath his videos, you see blah, blah, every blah, third one is let himself go. Angela Merkel's let herself go.
But he's done with those kind of big tours. He says he kind of says like he doesn't really know what to do now. Like he's kind of come to the end of the road with what the way he does stand up at the minute. Like, you know,
he's in a weird space.
He even says it in the special. He goes like, "In the character of Stuart Lee, I've created who, to be honest, I'm fucking sick of. I don't like him.
Yeah, yeah.
He's fatter than me."
He's not big enough that he can retire on his laurels.
No, no, he's not. He is going to have to do some kind of performing or writing or whatever, you know.
Save this for a Stuart Lee
special. Yeah, we should do
Sure. It's been a while now since we did it.
I think almost every other podcast is a Stuart Lee podcast.
Yeah, there might be a bit of that.
But anyway, we should probably...
Yeah, what time are we on?
We're 2:23.
Sounds... Really?
Yeah, but that's not gonna. This will be like it'll be shorter, or it'll be just as long, but it'll have more music in it. I don't know.
Sounds good. Put more music in it. We didn't play enough music.
Oh yeah, no.
Especially after I give out about your man not playing Elvis on the Elvis documentary.
So, what do you want to do for next week, Niall? Do you want to do a swap, or what do you?
I want you to watch Mindhorn.
Okay.
Which is a comedy.
I want you, Niall McCann, to watch Disenchantment, the Matt Groening thing.
Oh yeah, did you watch it?
Yeah, I've watched two or three of them and it's funny.
Okay.
More leaning towards more Futurama than Simpsons, but I enjoyed it. I might not have watched the whole thing by the time we talk about it, but...
Okay.
Is Mindhorn on Netflix?
No.
No, no worries. Okay.
Sorry.
No,
I watched it on
Google. I have a computer. It's alright.
Okay, yeah. It's there. You'll find it.
So, that's it. So, that's your... I don't know when we'll be back. When we get a chance, we'll be back.
Yeah, folks... Think of us as very much like a pair of Clint Eastwoods who will wander off the fucking mesa at the moment when, I don't know, some Mexican's being a bollocks. It was the 60s! You could be racist then and it was fine!
We're going forward, there's probably going to be less episodes.
Yeah.
But I feel like we've more to talk about when there's less episodes. Like, you know,
I'm not doing enough.
Yeah, this is the thing. Episodes. Like,
I can't sustain an episode on my dishwasher regimen. I can't do it.
It's just the way it is. But we're going to keep doing the podcast. It's going to be maybe one or two episodes a month going forward. I'd say, like, you know,
hopefully so.
Yeah, But we'll make them, like, my plan is that if we're they're going to be a little, even though they're long, I'm going to get a little bit tighter with the editing. So hopefully, even though they're longer episodes, they won't be as flabby.
Okay.
You know, and it'll be, you know, I kind of foresee doing maybe more specials like this one and focusing on one person or one band or
whatever. What am I going to give you for special?
We should do a Coen Brothers episode.
Yeah, maybe. I'm going to get you fucking write everything or read everything Grant Morrison wrote.
No, but I'll read a couple of things. Look, the Velvet Underground one was, it's compact. It's four albums. You could do it, like, I listen.
Yeah, as these things.
Walking to work this week, I listen to a different Velvet Underground album every morning. Like,
literally since the first episode, we've been threatening a Father Ted episode.
But we need to do a Father Ted episode, yeah.
That's never going to happen.
No.
Goodbye, everybody!
It would just be us doing the quotes. It would be shit.
That was what the Simpsons ones were. And they were a couple of heavy hitters for us.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. But anyway, for the next episode, we'll be talking about Disenchantment, the Matt Groening cartoon that's on Netflix at the moment, and Mindhorn.
That by the guy who is not Noel Fielding in The Mighty Boosh.
He might not even be Julian Barrett. I think he's like a smaller player in the Mighty Boosh thing. Am I right about that?
No.
Is it your man?
Yeah,
it's all right, cool.
It's Julian Barrett.
So then the less annoying half of the Mighty Bush. The one that doesn't eat cake or whatever the fuck.
The one that doesn't show up on the Big Fat Quiz of the Year.
Yeah. The one who's not that good looking.
Paul Fielding's not that good looking.
No, he's just like, but he's got that Libertines fucking trashy glam thing going on.
I like the Libertines.
Yeah, did you see that picture of Pete Doherty eating the big fry up?
No.
Some cafe in England did this thing. You know, one of these things where, like, almost like a man versus food thing where it's like, eat the big fry up and get your picture up on the wall.
I've watched so much Man versus Food.
I really like Man versus Food.
Yeah, but it's wrong, though, isn't
it? No, and that guy, did you notice the second season of Man versus Food was other people doing the challenges? Because I'm sure that man's doctor was like, enough now, fucking weirdo.
Yeah.
But like, they showcased fucking local businesses, like, or small businesses around America, like, you know, and
that's true, but man.
It wasn't, this thing wasn't to the same extent as that, but Pete Doherty in his local cafe that has eat the big fry up and get your picture on the wall, there was a picture of him on Facebook eating the big fry up.
Oh,
a big tray with like fucking like six fried eggs on it, like, and
the mighty have fallen. Is he portly now?
He doesn't look well. He's not Shane McGowan.
Is he still on the fucking?
Well, he just looks like, he just is who he is, Pete Doherty. Like, I don't know if he's still on drugs or whatever. I'm sure he's not. I'm sure there's, look, he's not a 5-a-day dude at all. Like,
yeah.
But he's not Shane McGowan either. Like,
he's still married to one, is he?
I don't know. I don't know what the story is there.
Fucking Jesus.
Because they asked Carl Barat about this business of him eating the big fry up, and Carl Barat was like, I've seen him eat more than that. I wasn't that surprised. So anyway, on that note, from Lou Reed with his smack to Pete Doherty with his fry up, we've done the lot.
No Tucky Rogers there.
So, see yous when we see yous. I've been Danny Manlin.
I have been Niall McCann.
And cheery bye.